On this episode of Podigious.
He was listed as continuity, which apparently is a rule, according to Anime News Network, which this movie could have had some help with.
If a tree falls in the forest but it doesn't make a sound, is it canonical?
Play with me. I will hug you. Who cares? They can just do whatever. They can just Digivolve to Mega and la-di-da.
This show is called Digimon. You've been doing this for, like, months.
That went beyond, like, being a smooth player to, like, being a creepy murderer.
Yeah, Edgemon, you don't want to be changing diapers. Screw that.
You're gonna need a password. You can use mine to get on the internet.
Podigious!
Looking out a dirty old window. Down below the cars in the city go rushing by.
Welcome to Podigious, episode 211. Lackadaisical Breeze, Unexplained Evolutions, the Smoothest Jazz.
Adventure 02, Hurricane Touchdown Supreme Evolution, the Golden Digimentals, or Digimon the Movie, Part 3.
Canonicity, Corruption, and Nostalgia.
Recorded March 14th, 2015. I'm Jeff Ruberg, and I'm joined by Ashley McDonald.
That's me.
And Ashra Soffman.
Hurricane Touchdown. I just want to... It's so good.
What does that even mean? All right, whatever.
You want things to mean things, Ashley?
Yeah.
Why?
I get confused when things don't mean things.
That's silly.
Andrew is busy this week with schoolwork and sick, so that's what he gets for being in school.
Yeah, that's pretty much is what you get for being in
school. Wow.
The lesson is, kids, don't go to school.
Don't go to school.
Watch Digimon instead. This episode of Podigious is brought to you by the Colorado Tourism Office. Come visit Summer Memory. It's totally actually a place and not poorly translated Japanese. Enjoy the scenic American countryside where kids can disappear for days and wander thousands of miles without their parents caring or noticing. America, the land of guns and jazz. F you, Ashley. We're here with follow-up with Jeff and Ashley. Do-do-do-do. Why did I do the Price is Right noise? Anyway, so first off, we have news about Digimon for the first time in a while. And it's a new Digi-Egg, and that's kind of depressing because we would hope there'd actually be a show now for Try. But instead, we have a new Digi-Egg, and maybe there'll be information in a couple days. We don't know. Go click it every day,
maybe
I guess.
Maybe a trailer. I kind of assume it's a trailer.
Probably a trailer, hopefully. Could be a release date, could be a lot of things. But for now, we don't really know.
The trailer would have a release date.
Yes, but it could be a release date that's like tomorrow.
Oh,
but
stop!
We have no idea. And so now on to announcements of the podcast. And if it's not clear, we are trying to speed up feedback, feed up the whole follow-up segment and get it all done quickly so you can get to the main meat of the show. So that's why we're going to be rushing through all this. First of all, the last episode released, which was about 2 weeks ago now, was an April Fool's episode. I think everyone who listens got that. But
eventually.
I presume if you're listening to this, you also listen to that one, so you understood it was April Fool's. But there's a chance someone didn't listen to that episode, skipped over it, waiting to listen to it after they watched Summer Wars and didn't realize it was April Fool's episode. So yeah, it was complicated layers. We pretended we were covering Summer Wars, then pretended to talk about Hurricane Touchdown, but we're actually talking about Pokemon Origins Episode 1. And this episode is actually covering Hurricane Touchdown, so don't worry. This would be a very long con if we set up another show to pretend to be discussing. So the next bit of announcement is we have 5 more stickers. So same deal as last time. The first 5 people who email us with their mailing address, does not have to be within the US. We learned how to do that from last time. It can be anywhere. First 5 people who email us with their address, we won't disclose your address or anything like that, or your name or anything like that. So feel comfortable sending it to us and then we'll send you a sticker. And anyone who got stickers before or gets them this time, be cool if you take pictures of them, put them on social media, and then we can like reblog them or retweet them or whatever. So this is actually the second to last episode of the main stuff from 02. So we have this movie and then we have Revenge of Dewbormon next week. And then we're going to do a retrospective episode, which we talked about a couple of times in terms of having the listener favorite clips, which you can still send in. And those need to be in, we've pushed back, those need to be in by Sunday, April 26th. And the last bit of announcements we have about Podigious is that we're going to do shirts.
Shirts.
So
we have 2 colors.
Two secret colors. So we're gonna have two colors available, and also both men's and women's fits, and also you can choose your own size. We're gonna be doing it through Teespring, and we're gonna launch that in the next couple of days. Well, we're not sure when exactly we're gonna launch it. And the campaign's gonna last about a month, so you have a month to buy the t-shirt before it runs out. And yeah. And so follow us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr. I guess I will post it on Reddit. I'm not sure if people on Reddit will like that. They might get mad at me for
I mean
people on Reddit like shirts. They like other shirts designs. So yeah, look for us on social, if you follow us on social media, we'll let you know as soon as we post. As soon as the campaign starts with shirts, and we'll keep reminding people. We'll also mention the next episode where you go to find shirts and buy them. They should be, we're not sure the exact price, including, and then shipping I think varies worldwide, but I think it should be a little under $20 for sure, which is the cheapest we can make it. Plus they're using the highest quality shirt and not making the Chibomon logo monotone. I tried to reduce it to as many, to as few colors as possible, and like I got down to like 8 colors, and it still was expensive, so. Yeah. We have an old iTunes review from May 22nd, 2014 from Neku Rules in the USA. And the original content of this review was, the title was Interesting, 2 exclamation points. I'm not sure. I assume at that point it became enough of a meme that I say interesting enough.
I mean, it was
from the beginning.
Only in one episode.
Actually, I don't think it was about me. I think it was at that point, it was just a discussion of how we shouldn't say that word. And it was only recently become a joke about how I suck at following that to the extreme. Anyway, so then the content of the review was, great podcast. Format, flow, and design are excellent. The hosts are great with unique takes on this anime classic. Highly recommended. And then this translated version put through 43 different languages back and forth, and the title is now very interesting with 3 exclamation points. They seem to compile, build up, and the body of the review is, please, with 5 exclamation points. And this format is suitable for the dynamics of price.
Okay.
Car. Anime. Classics. We recommend!
Anime classics.
No, car.
Car.
Anime classics. I mean, it's not spelled out. There is car. One of the sentences was just translated to car. But I think of it as like, car. Anime. Classics. Which is totally how I would describe our podcast if we had to. So now on to feedback. This is kind of, I guess, complicated because we didn't do follow-up last episode. This is feedback for episode 210, which was 3 weeks ago, and 003, which was the April Fool's Fake Out episode, which I also labeled as SW01 when I was pretending that it was Summer Wars, which was 2 weeks ago. Okay, so we have new listeners, at least new names I didn't recognize until recently, Molly and Magical Game, and also we got feedback from Nebu, Cedar Meal, Asalat Shamalfin, Hia Lore, John Summers, Nate LS, Sonny Mac23, Matt Price, Lars, Empire Will, Digital X, Alex Michelle, Cars My Favorite, Peter, Kailani, Dot Yawning, Psychic Echo, Confident Coward, Smile Wolfie, Pi687. So thank you to all of you for giving us great feedback.
It's a lot of you.
Yes. I've been trying something new these past couple weeks to more efficiently file feedback that comes in. And so in testing out the system for the first time, I may have missed some people. So I'm really sorry if we missed you. But hopefully we'll iron that out and won't happen again. But we read everything that comes in. I just may have filed it incorrectly. So a couple comments I wanted to discuss.
Wait, can I do my...
So Ashley has a thing she needs to say.
I read the design of Everyday Things after our 210 episode came out or whatever, and whatever episode where we made fun of Arukenimon for pulling the handle off the door. And I would just like to say to Arukenimon, if that door was unlocked and it had a handle, like you're supposed to pull it, but it was a push door, that's the door's fault. I don't blame you, Arukenimon.
Oh, so now you're making it seem like we were victim blaming her or something.
We were victim blaming her.
We were design victim blaming her.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true, because I don't think she didn't, like, pull off the handle and then be like, well, that didn't work, and then, like, push and, like, oh, it was a push door. Instead, she was, like, she... It seemed
it's not her fault.
when she pushed, it seemed like she always knew she had to push. So I don't think she was confused.
Then she was like, well, now it just doesn't have a handle. It'll clearly just push open.
I guess I don't know what the dialogue was, but the gif that I saw recently is just her going, like, pfft. Anyway, so on to real feedback from real listeners, Ashley. You're not a real listener. You're a fake listener.
I'm a fake listener.
Okay. So Cedar Mill wrote in and mentioned the theory that he says that he saw it floating around in Withable a bit late, so it wasn't original to him, but I think it's a really cool theory, which is that, so as the end of Zero Two plays out, Davis doesn't have an illusion and comes in and saves everyone. They all is happy. They all live happily ever after epilogue. And he mentions the possibility that that entire scenario of Davis coming in, save everyone, having a happy-go-lucky epilogue is Davis's illusion. And that, you know, I guess in this depressing end, they're all just, you know, minus one, mal minus one took over the world. And then, so yeah, I think that's a really cool theory. Of course, there's no, like, information in the text itself to confirm or deny that. And I guess it's kind of how, like, whenever you have a dream scenario, I guess you can always be like, well, maybe the whole thing was a dream. Like, I think it's always possible to, like, have that alternate conspiracy theory interpretation, but I think it is especially fitting here because Davis has no illusion and it is so discrepant with his nature to not have one, to not have desires. I think in the last episode we talked about a different way, like, different ways interpreting the whole, like, it's not about him just having no desire, it's about him having no, like, thing about himself he wants to fix, or, like,
he has no, like, blatantly unattainable.
Oh yeah, you were talking about how being an unattainable wish, which I still think is kind of muddled. But since Cardi's
people argue, they're like, eh. I mean, like, he couldn't really become a soccer star, but that's not outside the realm of possibility.
Yeah. So, and then Hia Laurie wrote in and had a alternate explanation for Yulee's seeming whiplash into becoming a parent and caring all and, like, pouring her life into kids when that's not something I've ever seen her really care about. And it's also weird for her to have lots of kids when it's, like, that was her complaint, that she had too many siblings and didn't really get much attention. But that, you know, like, her being a full-time mom, presumably if she's a full-time mom, which all indications point to that, is possibly a way for her to, you know, like, show her kids the kind of love and attention, and not that she didn't get love, but the attention that she didn't get as a kid, and kind of in a way, like, generations tend to, at least in fiction, generations tend to try to correct their parents.
I guess. I just also feel like it's a trope that, like, there's a woman who's like, I don't want to have kids. And then, like, once she hits 30, she's like, some crazy hormone crap happens to her, and then she just wants kids, and, like...
Actually, we quiet. Hold on. Is the clock?
Yeah.
It's your biological clock ticking. Once you hit 30.
It's the Final Fantasy clock.
So, yeah, I think that is a trope to, like, have... to make a complete turn like that, and it plays on the whole, like, women just need to, like... women can kind of act... can rebel against their femininity, but, like, they're gonna have to grow out of it someday, and... of course, everyone wants to be a mother and stuff once they feel it in their bones and their biological clock ticks. And, yeah, I mean, that it is kind of gross, but yeah. And I like the connection to Yuli's experience with her children or with her siblings.
I guess my problem is that, like, in that scenario, I don't know if we're necessarily given enough indication that, like, her parents are at fault.
I think there was because, like, I got the impression that her parents were busy running that shop, that grocery, convenience store, whatever it was, all the time, given that they had to, like, have her work at it and stuff. And my assumption was they were always working all the time. Maybe I read into things and it wasn't quite spelled out, but... So the next piece of feedback comes from John Summers, and he wrote a really lengthy comment, but the one part that I wanted to talk about in particular on the show is... how he takes issue with Oikawa's handling, and basically, I think I'm kind of summarizing that he finds it manipulative to introduce this villain and then, like, kind of be like, oh, of course you're going to feel sympathy for him, like, kind of forcing the viewer's hand into sympathizing with him. And that, like, he's kind of done, in John Summers' eyes at least, like, too much to really ever be redeemed, and the redemption felt kind of cheap. There are a couple things I wanted to, like, respond to about that. Just that, like, I really like exploring a villain's motivations, and I kind of, like, at any point, I will always get behind a villain. You know, like, even if you introduce a villain early on and then, like, at the last minute, try to explore his motivations, like, I'll always go for that, because I feel like villains with realistic motivations and realistic behavior is very underrepresented. And I wouldn't say this is actually a realistic motivation and behavior, because, I mean, he's still, like, this is more standard. This is more like, this villain actually has some tragic reason why he became a villain, which is not common, I wouldn't say, but, like, it is definitely not rare. I feel like villains who are actually doing something that is redeemable. So this is a villain who's doing something that's irredeemable, but he had a sad reason to be this way, to become this way. And there are, the better situation is a villain who is doing something that actually makes sense and is redeemable, but we're just coming from a different perspective, so we don't see it as redeemable until things change or you learn more or whatever. So it's not perfect, but I'll always get behind, you know, actually exploring a villain's motivations, even if it's, you know, like, abrupt and there are issues. I mean, I do think that, like, well, I mean, I guess the alternative is, like, I would never not want to explore the villain's motivations. I guess there are sometimes when, like, you make the villain, like, so ridiculously evil, like Myotismon, where you're just, like, that's not something you care about. You don't really want Myotismon to, you don't need to know, like, Myotismon's origin as a vampire. You know, like, all you need to know is, like, he's an evil vampire. He's evil. Yeah, like, you don't need to know, like, why he wants to be a vampire that rules the world. You know, it's just,
like, it's normally the type of villain I hate, though.
When it's just, like, just care. Evil.
Yeah.
Just capital evil. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I definitely feel that way, too. And even though Oikawa's is really cheesy and the ability for everyone to, it is really ridiculous how, like, I don't think it's so, I mean, John Summers took a lot of issue with the fact that he, like, kidnaps children and, like, puts them in a van. I'm like, he permanently scars them for, not just scars them for, like, he permanently puts something in them that's going to affect their lives, affect the rest of their lives. Like, they're going to be stuck with the dark, like, they I forget what they say exactly, but, like, they're going to have to struggle with this dark sword for the rest of their lives, struggle with depression and PTSD for the rest of their lives. Like, he has seriously messed up their lives forever. And, yeah, for them to just be, like, oh, but he had a sad history. So, like, okay, he's a good guy now. And it's also that he was betrayed by Myotismon. Like, I do think it does kind of turn a little bit too quickly. And it does play around with, like, the fact that, like, well, he's not a threat anymore, so of course he's redeemed. You know, like, and as soon as he, like, also, as soon as he's betrayed, he realizes what he did was wrong. And it's just, like, all these things are very convenient. I can see people being frustrated with it. I definitely wouldn't consider him, like, a well-executed villain.
It was not well-executed. I don't know. I just always take issue with, like, people hating on things. And they're like, it's emotionally manipulative. I'm like, yeah, it's a fictional story. That's the point of fictional stories.
Yeah, I think emotionally manipulative. I actually thought about that because, like, it's something that's come up with it. With an anime that aired this past week called Plastic Memories, that, like, in its first episode, its entire premise seems to be designed to be, quote-unquote, emotionally manipulative, which is a lot of people's reaction to the first episode. I didn't like the first episode because the whole premise is a world where things are going to be sad. Like, the people, the main character's job is to separate families. And, like, I just found it very frustrating how no one in this world seemed to realize that their job was going to be sad. Until they do it, and they're like, oh, this is so sad. Like, your job is to separate families and basically kill a family member. And they're like, oh, no, we didn't realize it. Whatever. But a lot of people were just like, oh, I'm emotionally manipulative. It is, I think there's some merit to that because it's like, this entire premise is to kind of pull at your heartstrings. So, like, it feels a little bit more.
I get where you're coming from. I just disagree with it fundamentally.
I think it's a weird criticism to say emotionally manipulative because, like, everything is to a degree emotionally manipulative. Like, that's the point. Like, it should manipulate your emotions. That's the goal of the story, of any story, is to affect you. If it doesn't affect you, that's really bad. But yeah. So, what else do I want to say about this?
I just also think it's like, people are like, it doesn't make you think at all. Like, good stories should just make you think instead of feel. And I'm like, that's just the
people say that?
Like, I feel like that's the notion underlying it, is that, like, things that are just touching you on an emotional level are trash. Things that make you think are good. But I feel like that's a false dichotomy between, like, how emotions and thoughts interact with each other.
Are you thinking about Nicholas Sparks?
For being emotionally manipulative?
Or, like, that? Like, that's how people refer to his works. It's just, like, there's nothing of me there to think about.
I read that, like, people just think is emotionally manipulative. And then there's plenty of things that I read that I'm like, I don't know. Since recently I've been reading more, like, science, psychology oriented things, I'm just like, this is just, neither of these is an accurate representation of how humans actually think of anything.
I mean, I think when, and to be clear, we're just discussing general things, we're not, like, we've kind of spiraled way out from this original comment, but that, like, I see a lot, whenever I see something that's like, things should make you think instead of blank, I'm always like, you know, that's because that sounds very similar to things that are like, take your politics out of this. Cause, like,
yeah.
It shouldn't tell me what to think. It should let me think or whatever. Like, it shouldn't tell me what I should believe. It should just let me think about things. It's like, that's not how things work. The last thing I just want to say about this comment was, and it's, it, not like specifically, it is something that John Summers mentioned, but it's also a thread I see like throughout a lot of things. A lot of the way people refer to Oikawa and the Daemon Corps and Chiaki Konaka for season two. And so John Summers just said that, like, mentioned how like, it's absurd that this would be considered less dark than the Demon Corps, or actually, because I think the implication was, what's his name? Dragomon. That like, the thing that is commonly stated, I've seen it in lots of places, is that the Dagomon was initially intended to be a much bigger part of the story, but was cut out because it was too dark. I think I've also seen the rumor that the Daemon Corps was also supposed to be, Daemon was supposed to be the final villain, but it was cut out because it was too dark. As far as I can tell, after looking at this a bunch, is that, like, that is complete rumor. That's, like, a lot of speculation about things Konaka, like, I haven't found anything that's actually, like, Konaka saying this is what happened, or anyone else saying this is what happened. And even if those things were said, like, a decade and a half later, or I guess it's, at this point, it's been, like, 12 years, it's not entirely trustworthy. I mean, people fabricate things, people have false memories, people... There are lots of reasons you would misremember a show that you worked on that wasn't your passion project, that was just some show you worked on for most of a year, 10 years later. But anyway, like, it seems to be entirely speculation about, like, there's this assumption this is true. It gets spread around. I can't find an actual source for it, and it just seems like people... So I'd love for someone to send me the source and, like, clarify it, and then I don't. But it seems like this is more of a, like, accepted wisdom without... any fact behind it. In which case, I think the Occam's Razor explanation is that, like, no, that wasn't cut off from being too dark. This is definitely darker. Having an old man who was... Having an old man, regardless of his backstory, who kidnaps children and scars them for life in the back of a van, like, that is darker than a bad guy who was really big. You know, like, maybe Cosmic Horror might be darker. But, like, the Occam's Razor is that, like, that wasn't the reason. And it seems like a lot of people get upset about this because they're like, ah, this was removed from being darker, but it wasn't actually darker. Like, not only would it have been better if Dagomon was kept around, it would have been less dark, and they wanted to be less dark, so why didn't they just choose the thing I wanted? There are a lot of assumptions and a lot of things being thrown around as...
I just feel like, yeah, there was zero planning. I just assume there was no planning and coordination.
That's not how...
No.
Not how stories happen.
Like, I think that's how Zero Two happened.
I am trying to get you to clarify your hyperbolic language. Bad coordination happened.
Right.
Lots of people working on different things, like, but not, like, they didn't just all...
I don't think there was any purposeful, like, malicious leaving out of things. I think it's just, like, in the production of this.
Okay. That's the kind of fans having... theories that explain the facts and then saying those, you weren't saying it as a fact, you were just speculating it. But I think that's how this kind of thing forms, is like a fan sees things, comes up with a theory to explain, comes up with a, like, behind the production theory to explain how things happened, and that gets spread around a fact, and then, like, that, you know, snowballs and solidifies. And so, like,
but I feel like you're trying to use other logic just to debunk a theory, like saying...
Right, but, like, you don't know anything about the production, so, like, you being like, well, I think this. Like, okay, you can think that, but, like, the problem is when that becomes solidified as fact in the fandom. Next comment came from ShineMac23, and this is what he had to say. On the whole, I feel like these illusions represent a huge missed opportunity for the show. They're a great idea and concept, but they were terribly executed. These illusions represent an opportunity for the show to sort of provide a final thesis, if you will, on who these characters are and what motivates them in life, and they pretty much do absolutely nothing with it. TK and Cody's, while logical, do nothing to deepen our understanding of the characters, as they take the most superficial thing about those characters that we've known all along, try to pass it off as profound new insight into these characters. With Kari? I think the former guy messed up when I copied and pasted this. With Kari and Yoli, the two of them were barely given any non-superficial character attributes throughout the season. Yes, there are beginnings of stuff like Kari's wish for peace or Yoli's selfishness, but they never do anything with these things, and thus when they get to this point, when they could make a final statement out of who these characters are, and they have nothing. I think, if anything, these illusions are demonstrative of this season's complete utter failure in characterization. I think that was a really good comment, and, like, the thing I want to add to that is just that, like, anything they could have done at this point with the characters at the end, with their illusions, as a final thesis to what they've built up with their characterization, like, they haven't built up anything. So, like, anything they did would have been crap.
I feel like people missed the point of our illusions discussion. Okay, yes. What? In that, like, I don't know. it seems like everybody, like, we tried to be like, given what they had to work with the rest of the season, these illusions made perfect sense, and we don't know why people are upset about it. And then every comment that we've gotten is just like, no, they're horrible. And I'm like, our argument wasn't that they weren't horrible, it's that they made sense given the character motivations that we were given.
Yeah, and I think they kind of are emblematic of 02 in general. Just like, and I think it's the kind of thing that, like, made a lot of people, a lot of the comments we received, it's kind of weird now because we're recording almost 3 weeks later. It's been a while, so, like, it's kind of, things are not raw anymore, but, like, there were a lot of, like, very, not angry, but, like, a lot of people disagreeing with this, like, no, 02 is terrible, stop defending it, and not quite that vocal, but, like, and I feel like we took a stance that was like, these aren't quite as terrible as everyone points them out to be. And then people were like, no, they definitely are. And I think they, because they're both at the end of the series and well, it lasts in people's memories, but like that plus the fact that they just like are kind of a culmination of what 02 does badly. So like, given what they had to work with, they aren't terrible, but like,
I will agree to disagree
with people.
I am not bothered by these illusions.
And I think Shawnee Mac 23 put it well, is in that, like, there was potential for this device, but I think this device could not have
worked in two episodes.
Yeah. Like, I just think, like, it...
I think at this point, it's like, we all agree we would rewrite 02, but at the point where it's like, we pick chunks that were like, we hate this, and I would rewrite it to be a million things, I'm just like, I don't care anymore.
Right, I think we all... It's weird, because, like, we all kind of agree that, like, we wish... 02 are kind of like from the ground up and rewritten in some way, and at that point, like, arguing the merits of like one rewrite versus another is just like,
I mean, especially it's, this late, like episode like 50 or whatever.
Oh no, like, I'm just thinking, you know, like at the point where you're like rewriting everything, like the execution is what matters. Like, I think I think you could actually take like the broad strokes of what has been done with the season and just execute it better, and like
exactly.
So yeah, I feel like.
It's like there's nothing fundamentally that bad with this season. It's just all executed so poorly.
Yeah. The last comment I want to mention was from Empire Will, and talking about, and this was on Reddit, and talking about astronaut Matt, and explaining, because we were kind of like, well, we don't understand why people were so upset about Matt being an astronaut, and Empire Will pointed out that, like, that to be an astronaut, you need to, like, be...
Okay. You need to be, like, an engineer and, like, have a high-level degree.
Right, you need to be an engineer, have a high-level science degree, or a member of the Air Force.
You need to be physically fit.
Yeah, and I think... Well, first, I forgot this comment mentioned all these different possibilities. So, like, I feel like the... Of these, the most... The one that requires the least explanation as a 11-year-old, or whatever Matt was, is being in the Air Force. Like, I mean, how are you really going to portray this 11-year-old as being a military man? Like, that's something that manifests until later. You know, like, it could have been that he... Join the Air Force. It could have been that he, like, joined the military because he needed to pay for college and then joined the Air Force and then, like,
yeah, it's not really a trajectory you can really illustrate. We didn't see him at a point in his life where, like, these things had been decided.
Well, so that was the point out that, like, they don't show him being particularly studious or academic. And
But
my point was that, like, I feel like it would have been even more jarring to, in a story like this, where you just jump from their being their kid, middle school self, to being their adult self, to jump, take like Izzy or Joe, who are shown to be very academic and rigorously school-oriented, and then be like, well, they're astronauts. You'd be like, what? What? That doesn't follow. Like, cause it's not what you think of when you think of an academic person, even though you does require being an academic person. Like, it's like a rectangle and square. To be an astronaut, you need to be academic. You take any academic person and they're like, jump 20 years and they're an astronaut. And you're like, what? That doesn't make sense.
I just assume there was enough time for Matt to become studious and just be behind studiousness.
Sure. I mean, yeah. I think ultimately we're just stepping around the thing we discussed before, which is that just the, like, it is totally realistically plausible for this, for him to show no signs of wanting to be an astronaut or signs of being capable of being an astronaut as a 12-year-old, 11-year-old, whatever he was. But from a storytelling standpoint, it is kind of bizarre to just jump ahead and, you know, for the conclusion to be something that has never seeded before is weird, but it is plausible.
We all agree that it would have been better from a storytelling standpoint not to have this epilogue.
I don't think everyone agrees in just not have an epilogue.
Not have this epilogue.
Listener unanswered questions. Thanks to Shawnee Mac 23, John Summers, Alex Michelle, Cars My Favorite for these unanswered questions. And my pick is from Alex Michelle, and they said, I wonder if Davis used hashtag Eat More Noodles to get his business out there. noodle cart business.
He definitely did.
And I was kind of just obligated. As soon, if someone mentions even hashtag even Windows, I have to pick it. So just it's like sucks me.
I will pick Shawnee Mac 23s. Is there any significance to the fact that the only illusion Davis went into alone was TK's? Yes, they're secret lovers.
Well, okay.
There's no question.
So it's not an answer question, man. It's oh, just...
Wait, well...
Sure, it doesn't have to be.
You can disagree with me.
Doesn't have to be. And then for Ridiculous Dialogue Draft... And, I mean, this is weird because, like, it's been so long... It's been so long since we released... this episode, because April Fool's and taking a week off, but also even longer for us since we recorded, and even longer since we watched the episode, so I'm, like, trying to remember these some of these scenes, and, but this one, my pick, is was submitted by Cry Is My Favorite, and, oh, so, first of all, thanks for Cry Is My Favorite. First off, thanks to Cry Is My Favorite and Alex Noah for sending us Ridiculous Dialogue Draft picks, and my pick is from Cry Is My Favorite, and it was something that I also wanted to make an IDD pick, but I didn't quite know how to fit it into our normal format, but so the way this minute is, Mormon's use of the word blow upable in his serious conversation with Paco Greatman.
The whole time we've been chasing you around, watching you blow up everything blow upable, you've just wanted to find something to destroy you.
Did not fit at all, and it was great.
I think I will go also, I'm sorry, I'll also go with Kari as my favorite. So she both has to die and live. I don't know, you get resurrected or something.
Like, I was kind of purposely not mentioning the Hunger Games, to be honest, this time. But...
No, I lost it. Which one did I want? Right. Okay, Davis apparently has a burn on himself in the second to last episode. Well, apparently it's in the recap.
If I ever stopped to think about anything, I'd be scared too.
Oh, Davis.
the self-Davis burns are pretty good. Because it actually, I mean, like, for me... I'm just thinking, I'm like trying, I don't know, for some reason I'm thinking about it more analytically than I should, but like, for me, like, how do you compose a joke? Like, making a lot of other characters, like, be really mean to him and talk about how he's stupid is, like, really mean, and especially doesn't fit Digimon. And like, so if you have jokes that you want to make about him being stupid, you want a character as stupid, like, having other characters do it is, like, super mean-spirited and, like, totally against the morals of Digimon. But then if you just have him make fun of himself, I'm like, oh, totally cool.
And then he seems smarter than he actually does.
Oh, I was actually thinking, like, why didn't his friend step in and, like, be like, no, Davis, don't
stop that. Oh, yeah. That's why it works.
So now on to the winners of the Ridiculous Dialogue Draft poll from last episode 210, forever ago, about 20 months ago. And I think we all agree that it's been so long since then that we don't really care about the results. So we can just forget that it happened and move on. And
I think one person
go back to the episode.
Prefix Ash does.
Oh, so Asher, yeah. So Asher came in second place. Congrats to Asher.
No.
And now on to the episode. So Ashley, do you want to hold back these listeners from the main episode with your gloating?
Hold on a second.
Okay.
Well, so I got.
Let's.
I got a lot more than everybody.
Yes. Okay, so the number one pick was Ashley's pick of Davis saying the last minute of soccer game and next week I'm being like, I don't know what you're talking about. Second place was Ashley's quote about like Ty and Matt and Ty saying, Digiport open please, and then it doesn't open. And like, oh, it's not the magic word. Blah, 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 blah. I'm Ashley, I pick weird things.
I thought that one was better.
So, and then third place was Asher's pick of Izzy and his daughter being like Ramcat, Zimchip, whatever.
We need to figure out what Ramcats are.
No, I don't.
Time's coming.
But yeah, so Ashley, yeah, I'll go for her. She got about 3.5 times as many votes as the second place candidate, which is Asher. So, yeah. I guilted her into not gloating by talking about how she's holding back the listeners from the episode. But yeah, so if you want to have feedback, talk about in the next episode, about this one, about whatever we're going to talk about in the next couple minutes, you should send it to us.
We don't remember because we recorded it.
You should send it to us by Sunday, April 19th. So yes. We rewind time to the middle of 02 and pick up, I don't know, maybe after Ken is defeated?
TK and Kari travel to New York City without any parents to visit Mimi, but instead decide to travel 2,000 miles to stalk an American blondie and force Davis, Yoli, and Cody to fly around the world to meet them.
They meet Michael 2.0 and help him as he pits his two Digimon against each other in a fight to the death.
Cherubimon starts enacting his baby alternate universe fanfiction, but Angemon and Angewomon hate babies and put the Deus back in Deus Ex Machina by warp digivolving for 5 seconds just to release product placement for Tamers and the upcoming Digimon Emperor Downfall of 02.
This movie was strange.
This movie was very strange. It makes more sense in the original. This is one of the times where I will admit that.
What? No, I watched both. It was still weird.
Oh, you did? It is still
weird. So Ash and I watched both.
Yeah.
So Asher, did you watch...
I watched the original a long time ago. I did not watch it again this time because I was watching it this morning.
It's more of a curiosity to watch the original. It's not... It makes more sense. Doesn't necessarily mean it's better.
It makes more sense, but it still leaves the same questions sort of unanswered. It actually leaves more questions unanswered and, like, basically kind of in the end does have the same general plotting. So, like...
Yeah, really? And the dub really gets the gist, even though it leaves out half.
Yeah, the dub actually shockingly gets the gist.
Huh.
Yeah, so to clarify for people who have only seen maybe the Digimon movie and haven't seen the original Japanese version of this last act of it, in Japanese, this movie is actually about 65 minutes long, which is more than twice as long as the 30-minute part of the Digimon movie. So yeah, there's a lot that's cut out. It's really bizarre.
They cut out all the older children except for in the very beginning.
Yeah, I mean, that's not even... Most people who watch Digimon movie wouldn't even know that there's an arc with the older children. Well, it's not much of an arc even. It's like, it's not really completed, but there is a section with the older children. And the Japanese version is... A lot of what they cut out, though, is not necessary. A lot of it is just much slower pacing and lots of smooth jazz. So much smooth jazz.
Yeah. Really, oh, my gosh. I really can't take the soundtrack of the original Digimon at all. Can't stand it.
I don't think it's all bad, but this one was very smooth jazzy. The thing is, it has so many peaks and valleys to me. Like, there are so many insert songs and openings and endings. I'm like, oh, this is so amazing. I'll listen to this, like, several times on repeat outside of watching TV. And then there are background tracks. And I'm just like, But I mean, that's true of Digimon. Like, I feel like the background tracks are probably above the dub in general, but still not amazing.
I feel like a lot of what was cut out was just extra fighting and the older kids.
I actually wasn't sure. It's weird because I watched the Japanese version after the dub, so I'm kind of, my memory is now hazy, and so I can't remember exactly, but what I recall is that most of the fight scenes are retained, and it's the slower stuff in between that is, you know, abbreviated. But anyway, let's walk through it. We're trying a new format for the movies, since there's less to talk about in general, but also more interesting detailed stuff than individual episodes. So we're going to try going through the movie, kind of walking through it chronologically instead of talking about it as a whole. And yeah, as a disclaimer, we're going to be talking at the dub, but as we've mentioned before, like, this movie is kind of so... its adaptation from the Japanese version is so strange that I think we're going to have to keep referring to the Japanese version occasionally just to, like, make sense of what's going on, and also because the contrast is so big. So we start off with Wallace celebrating Diaboromon's defeat, supposedly, in the Field of Flowers. And, yeah, I mean, it's probably pretty clear.
Wait, are we using the Japanese name?
Oh, I wrote down Wallace. I meant to say Willis. Yeah, we're definitely using the English written name. Willis. Oh, see, I just got so confused now. We're referring to Willis. Willis is celebrating Diaboromon's defeat. And
Willis.
Yeah, that's pretty clear. That's brought in from the Digimon movie to tie him back into the other stuff with Diaboromon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then we move on to TK and Kari in New York City. And
posing for pictures.
Posing for a picture which no one takes in the dub.
That's true.
Yeah, so...
Who takes it in the sub? I don't remember.
Mimi. Mimi's actually there.
Oh, I see.
Right, so in the dub, they say they're going to see Mimi, but then they just show them having a picture taken, and then they, like, are inspecting a laptop that's hanging from something, and they're like, it lost connection, I don't know. Whereas in the Japanese version, Mimi takes a picture of them, is holding a laptop, then Mimi disappears because she's, like, abducted by Wendigomon. And then they're like, this laptop is hanging. And so, yeah, when you notice there's, like, a random laptop hanging, you're like, what is going on?
It's still strange. Even in the Japanese, I find that strange, though. And, like, Kari and TK are just like, eh, yeah, we don't really care that Mimi just disappeared. Prob's okay. Like, we'll figure it out later. No, there's a crying Digimon.
They weren't like that.
That's the vibe I got.
I thought they were like, this crying Digimon is the cause.
I guess, but then, I don't know.
Yeah, so interspersed in that scene in the Japanese version is they actually get in the dub a little bit of, you kind of see Tai, I think you see Tai playing soccer and Sora setting up flowers or something and mm-hmm. for mom's shop and Izzy at his computer. But in the Japanese version, it shows all of them. And I guess the only one that's missing is Joe in the dub. I think Joe's missing. And
I don't remember
they
Joe.
They show them doing their normal everyday thing and then disappearing because Wendigomon kidnaps them.
But in this one, they're just like, yeah, they're just chilling. Sora's still waiting for Tai to call.
Yeah.
I guess I felt the need to like remind us of where they are now because they were important in the other two thirds of the movie or one third. But it is bizarre.
They were trying very hard. A plus for trying.
Yeah. As we know that a lot of the creative forces behind the Digimon movie did not want the third part to actually be in it. And it was kind of forced on them from above. So makes me do kind of wish what would have happened if they had, you know, released it separately or if they had released the 2-0-2 movies together, you know, split them up season by season. That would have been cool. But oh well. So then Kari hears Wendigomon crying for help or something and Tika and Kari run into Willis with Terriermon fighting Wendigomon. And yeah, and they're kind of like, oh, look, a Digimon. Ooh, we should follow him. Let's stalk him. And he just, like, runs away. There is a clip that I wanted to play after he runs away. He calls his mom in the Japanese version. And
oh, yes.
So one thing, a detail that's cool about the Japanese version is that Wallace totally speaks English.
Really?
On the phone to his mom. Yeah. And there's actually one scene where he starts speaking Japanese, like, in the middle of the movie, after he's been speaking Japanese to the kids a lot. But the other cool thing is they actually, like, Wallace explains that he knows how to speak Japanese because he had a Japanese girlfriend.
I thought that was a weak explanation.
Okay, it's kind of a weak explanation, but I'm surprised there is an explanation.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool. But that's later on in the movie where he explains that. But anyway, so this is a moment where he's talking on the phone to his mom in English and is a prime example of, is it offensive to say it's English? I feel like seeing that right now feels much less offensive than actually saying it, but
I don't know.
They're a less offensive term for like when anime has really bad attempts at English.
I don't know.
It is a prime example of anime trying to sound like an American speaking English and really not doing a good job.
Will you tell Mom and me that I'm going to the summer memory?
He's going to the summer memory?
Yes.
So that's actually the name of the field, apparently, in the Japanese version.
Yeah, but the way that he says it is still wrong. Like,
no, but he calls his mom Mamemi. Like, what? What is Mamemi? Will you tell Mamemi?
I don't know, man.
Oh, Wallace.
But after that, he actually was pretty good. It's just that one line that was really weird.
Yeah. Basically. TK and Karin go to Amtrak to track him down. Woo, Amtrak.
Amtrak! Party! Amtrak is fail. It would stop in the middle of a canyon, though.
And make everyone else disappear.
I've had bad experiences with Amtrak. Boo, Amtrak.
The thing is, TK and Kari, yeah, so I don't know if it's actually in this scene or later on, but it doesn't really matter because it's kind of in their separate little plot thread, but TK and Kari are on Amtrak, and then at some point, like, some influence from Wendigomon means that they, like, go into some dark zone, and then the train stops, and all the other passengers disappear. But then they're abandoned somewhere, and somehow they eventually get to the field, and it's not really explained how, but who cares?
Nope. I thought Anjumon and Ajiwoman, you know, flew them there.
That would make sense.
Can they ride on them?
Yeah.
They carry them.
Well, they can't ride, but the Anjumon and Ajiwoman can carry them. They did it when they were little, anyway.
Mm.
Yeah. I'm more concerned how they got off the train now.
Can't you just open a door? What's the problem?
Can you just open a door?
Yeah.
When the train doesn't have power?
You have Digimon that can fist of hand of fate.
Yeah, I guess they just destroyed a train. They were like, yeah, screw you, Amtrak.
I'm more concerned with, like, in neither version do they really explain how everyone else on the train disappears. Like, in the Japanese version, are very explicit that Wendigomon is, like, searching for young Wallace. So he searches, so, like, he kidnaps the kids as, like, you're Digidestined or Chosen Children or whatever. So, like, you're not Wallace. Oh, oops. But he also kidnaps everyone else on the train and they never rescue them or anything. Well, they never rescue the other kids either, so.
Whoa, there's many unanswered questions. We're getting there.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Down the bottom.
So at the same time, actually earlier, Davis, Cody, and Yuli are on the beach, and they're just hanging out, having some fun times, and then they get an email, I guess, from TK and Kari, and they're like, you have to come to the USA and meet us. And in the dub,
it is super
bizarre if you think about it. It's just like, why are they, what, fly across the country? And their first concern is like, we don't have money. But like, why are they flying across the country unsupervised to meet TK and Kari, like, in the middle of USA? Like, what? Like,
their parents are totes cool with it.
Yeah.
Just use Imperial Jamon.
They don't have Imperial Jamon yet, Ashley.
They don't have him yet. I know.
But yeah, in the Japanese version, they are more explicit that like TK or Hikari and Takaru know at that point that all the Order Digest have disappeared, other chosen children, and Daisuke, Iori, and Miyako check in on the other ones, and they're like, they're all disappeared too, we have to save everyone. Takeru and Hikari know where to go to save them, so let's go to USA. But in the dub, they're just like, oh, we're hanging out in the US? Cool. We're the kids in America, apparently, so.
Yes. Exactly.
So then Davis, Cody, and Lee take lots of different transportation methods to, they land, they take a plane with freaking flyer miles, blah, blah, blah. They take a different thing and they hitchhike.
There's so much hitchhiking in this movie. Half the movie is hitchhiking.
Yeah. They can't like cover it up like they do in the original, in the actual series. But the crazy driver is much more funny in the Japanese because he's like, They actually, when they're hitchhiking in Japanese, they hold up a sign that says, like, we have monsters.
Yes.
Or something like that. Like, uh-huh. It's not the right phrasing, but it's like something about, like, have monsters or something. And, like, that's supposed to appeal to people. And then one of them is like, we shouldn't be advertising that we have monsters. And, like, whatever. And then the person that picks him up is, like, a weird Japanophile. So he's like, cool, those monsters look really great. But this is what he has to say about Japan. This is the driver of the hitchhiker, the guy who picks him up and, like, drives crazily and drives all on the screen.
Made in Japan is really great!
Is he saying made in Japan is really great?
Yeah.
Yes.
Made in Japan is really great!
Really great!
They're great!
Oh, I heard... He's Tony the Tiger.
I can't remember which podcast I heard this on, but I heard that, like, the official language, like, I think it's, maybe it's, like, the way that that catchphrase is, like, trademarked or something. It, like, spells out how, it's, like, spells out how long it is, and then it's, like, you sustain it for this length of time and don't stutter. Specifically, like, don't stutter when you say it. Anyway. Wow. So, yeah, they get hitchhike, they do lots of hitchhiking. They eventually hitchhike with Willis.
Right.
And then they all meet up with Willis at some point, and they talk about how they all have Digimon, like, woo, yay. And then eventually Davis and Willis get separated because Davis is stupid. In both versions, it's Davis or Daisuke being stupid. And
it's true.
Then they kind of, then Wendigomon finds them, and then the Flame Jabon fights Wendigomon, blah, blah, blah. And they destroy the roads. They can't actually hitchhike anymore. Too bad. And so then.
No, that part doesn't make any sense because it's not like anybody driving on the road knows that the road is now destroyed.
It's true. Like,
until they get there.
Right. Like, yeah. But it's clear that it's possible that, like, maybe they would drive up to the potholes and then be like, well, not potholes, in the gaping holes in the road, and then be like, we can't go any further, let's turn around, which would hurt their cause if they want to keep going in one direction, and if the cars physically can't get past.
But if somebody's turning around, then they would turn around. If they were going the wrong direction initially,
oh, that's true.
And then they had to turn around, they would be going the right direction.
Ashley, too much logic. Too much logic.
It's true, it is too much logic for Digimon.
And they needed to highlight Raygemon, who was a new Digivolution at the time, so everyone wanted to see him.
Oh.
Well, so this movie in Japan, I can look up when it came out in America, but in Japan at least, it came out right after the episode with Shurimon first appeared. So, like, Raygemon was still pretty, a couple episodes new at that point, and, like, so it was, like, a big deal. And I'm pretty sure it was around the same time in the dub timeline that the Digimon movie came out. But I might just remember that because of the structure, because of the chronology. Anyway, so Raygemon helps them catch up with the other kids, and then, for some reason, after they catch up, Davis and Willis walk on their own to talk in the middle of the night and have a heart-to-heart in the woods.
Just crying.
Yeah, there's a lot of crying. That's Ash, I'm wondering what your impression was of that scene, having only watched the dub.
I mean, that scene is the best scene in the entire movie, like, hands down.
Like, best, most entertaining, most funny, or, like, most emotional?
Yeah. Funny. Is there any question with me? Like, oh my god. No, yeah, like that I have never, even as a kid, I had that one section memorized where Davis is like, "That's the saddest story I ever heard." Willis is like, "Get over
That's
it."
Super
and Davis
accurate.
Is like, "Okay. Yeah, because I have had it memorized for 12 years."
I wrote that exchange down so I could talk about it at this point. Didn't need to because you memorized it.
I wrote it down too, but I'm not looking at it right now. But no, like that is the best scene in the movie, unless you're talking purely in animation terms, in which case the fights are actually all really impressive.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. It's hard for me to remember now because having watched the Japanese version, that crying makes... I'm not sure if it's because I've rewatched it once or because I rewatched it in Japanese, but like at least in the Japanese version, that's the first time where Wallace really talks about how like it's his own Digimon and he's like has to kill it basically, and that is something that is really sad when you think about it. But I don't know, I'm wondering if like maybe in the dub I already knew that going into it, so I was like, well, of course you have to destroy him, yeah, duh, he's the bad guy in a movie. I don't know.
I think, did they cut out some of Davis's crying in the English version? Because it felt like he cried for an appropriate amount of time in the Japanese version, whereas in the English version, like Ash said, it was just like crying a line, then Willis being like, "Whatever, dude, get over it," and then he's like, "Yeah, okay."
The best.
Well, I think what the cutout was some of the time for Davis to like stop crying. You know, like it goes from him crying and be like, "Okay,
yeah."
And in the Japanese version, he like wipes his tears. He's like, "You have a point," like or something like, you know, and like there's a transition where in the English it's a comedic moment with no transition, but
but that's what makes it wonderful.
It does make you wonder if it was intentional. It has to be intentional.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it was intentional.
It's beautiful.
Beautiful.
Yes.
And then I think we go right to everyone. Well, then Terry Mon comes in and is like, "I'm here for you, yay.
I'm your friend." Just replace V-mon in the clip.
Wait.
Willis, I'm your friend.
So when I hit zero, I'm going to play V-mon on your friend, and then we all need to shout Terry. We only shout Willis instead, okay? This is a stupid thing. Let's not do it. Anyway, so then they all go to meet. They all go to the field. Summer Memory, apparently. That was the name, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Let me look it up.
Will you tell Mom Amy that I'm going to the Summer Memory?
Yep. It makes me wonder if that's a translation error. Like, you know, because it is a memory. It's a place where he has a memory of in summer.
That's what I thought he meant at first. And then, like, there were signs that were like, we're in Summer Memory. And I'm like, seriously? Like,
I'll look up if this is actually a place.
In Colorado.
Summer Memory, Colorado.
In yeah. Colorado, yeah.
I don't think so. Also, I don't know about Colorado, so there's that problem.
The first thing that comes up is Wallace Wikimon when I type in Summer Memory, Colorado.
Such a bad name, even if it were a real place. So then they meet Wendigomon in the field, and then that's basically the rest is just the climax of the movie, the crazy fight, extended sequence.
Kari and TK get there somehow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so they fight Wendigomon. I also had the trouble of not really reading too much into this fight sequence in the dub version, and then when I rewatched it in the Japanese version, not sure if it's Japanese version or just rewatching it, but it seemed much more clear that it was about like Wendigomon and Antilamon and Cherubimon playing with the Digimon. They kind of spelled that out in the Japanese version at least, and then at some point, like, you know, it's very much like Wendigomon, Antilamon, and Cherubimon are acting like a little child, and at some point it turns from like playing with them to like having a temper tantrum and all that stuff, where what I remember the first time was just like, yeah, they're fighting, cool. I don't know.
I think they try to get at that in the English when there's like some line that Willis is like, "This is all my fault," when they're like fighting but they're getting trounced, and then Davis is like, "Oh, did you teach him how to juggle?" Because he's like juggling the three of them or something.
Yes.
Yeah, that line. I don't know if you want that line. I didn't feel like that point of that line was too... I think it's also the tone of the music throughout the fight is, like, much more dire. I can't remember exactly what's played, but it seemed much more of a, like, dramatic fight, whereas in the Japanese version, it wasn't very dramatic up until the end. Until the end, then it got more dramatic. But, like, throughout most of it, it's just smooth jazz, and, like, it's... It doesn't really feel like their life is in danger for most of it, which I think is supposed to be the point, because he's just playing with them.
Can we title this episode Smooth Jazz?
Smooth Jazz.
Is there a name for, like... like with your like smooth jazz with blah 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 Cherubimon or something, like smooth jazz with is there like an adjective usually used to describe jazz musicians?
I don't listen, so I can't
tell you. I don't listen to jazz.
I'm thinking of like DJ Jazzy Jeff from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Oh, we could call it like smooth jazz with DJ Jazzy Jeff. I am Jeff.
Yes.
Do it.
Amazing.
Oh, so anyway, I mentioned before that like there's Wendigomon, Digivolves to Antilamon, Antilamon Digivolves to Cherubimon. They fight back with Flamedramon, Digmon, Aquilamon, and then at some point Angelwoman appear.
You mean Halsimon?
I do. I don't know. Halsimon and Aquilamon are like so plain to me. I mean, I get that like Halsimon has like armor on and stuff, but like once Aquilamon appeared, I just kind of, the place in my brain where Halsimon lived was just replaced with Aquilamon.
It's true. I totally understand.
Like there's kind of that effect with Ankylomon and Digmon, but like Digmon has the drills and like has lots of puns about drilling and stuff, so he gets a special place. I'll never forget Ankylomon and the doesn't feel so fun when you're on the bottom line, Yeah, and then we get to the very controversial Angelmon and Angemon being like, we don't know what to do, let's go to Ultimate or Mega, which depending on which version you're watching. And they do it and release Digi-Eggs, Golden Digi-Eggs, which allow Vimon and Terrymon to Golden Armor Digivolve into Magnemon and Rapidmon, right? Rapidmon, yes. Right? I'm like, yes. I don't remember them actually spelling it out, but I'm like, I definitely know that's Rapidmon from Tamers.
They say Rapidmon at some point.
I see.
This movie is full of... what the hell?
Yeah, it's full of unanswered questions. We have several segments to talk about that. I feel like that's really the part where the fight really kicks into a dire fight where, like, they're actually fighting back and hurting Cherubimon, and he's actually trying to hurt them. And then they kind of, like, make him disappear, but then he starts affecting the world around them to make them regress into their... they get younger and younger, and they... oh, no, that actually happens before. That actually happens. The warp digivolution to Seraphimon and Magnedramon happens while they regress their child forms. So as I say this, I keep remembering new Digimon they were introduced that I forgot about. Anyway, and so then they defeat Cherubimon. He turns good for a little bit before he disintegrates. And then everyone goes back to New York City, say goodbye. And it's really unclear where Willis lives. Whether he lives in Colorado or New York City, or in the Japanese version, just wanders around the U.S. all the time, doesn't really have a home.
How do you live in New York?
Yeah, I guess so. And then in the dub, Wendigomon... oh, so then Willis finds a new Digi-Egg with Chocomon, and in the dub, they show Wendigomon dancing to... what song is it, Ashley?
All-Star.
Oh,
yeah. Smash Mouth.
Yeah, and yeah, that scene's super bizarre, because, like, that scene is cut from the weird dancing he's doing is actually, in the Japanese version, from when they encounter him in the flower field, and is really out of place in the dub, because I would never have assumed that had he opened the Digi-Egg, whatever, not just gonna open the Digi-Egg, had the Digi-Egg hatched, it would be Chocomon, it wouldn't, like, immediately go to Wendigomon, especially since that's, like, the virus form of him, and... I assume had once Chocomon grows up and whatever, he would digivolve into a non-virus form champion, not Wendigomon anymore. So that was weird, but the best they could do. I could see how, like, the Japanese version ends much more with you see the egg and you see Wallace running towards it, and it's like, there's hope for the future, whereas in the dub they wanted to be like, there isn't hope for the future is now, and it is happy, and they're dancing. So given what they had...
and then they were kids in America.
Yes, kids in America is the best part. Looking at a dirty old window.
Down below, the cars in the city go rushing by.
I see them, and I wonder
alone
why.
Alone and why.
Oh, sorry.
You were wrong.
Yeah, Jeff.
Okay, I listened to the song obsessively like 15 years ago, so it's been a while. But I'm sorry. I always find it bizarre when I see the song like used in any other context, because I'm like, that's the Digimon song.
You know that song is from, like, the 80s, right?
Nope, you're lying.
Not lying.
I remember it was on... ooh, okay. I'm actually really curious about that. Because I heard that the Space Jam website is still active.
Yes.
From 1996. And I'm wondering if the Digimon movies website is.
Could be.
Oh my god, Space Jam website. You can visit our show notes at podigis.com/211 to go to the Space Jam website. But the Digimon website, Digimon the movie, I do not think is still up. But I remember that the website had the Kids in America song playing, and I had listened to it over and over.
On the website?
Yeah. I'm the definition of cool.
The song came out in 1981.
You came out in 1990. Burn.
Why is
burn,
it?
Burn.
Why is it written by a British person? Is this?
You also come out in 1990?
Shh. Spoiler.
What? I said it came out in 1981.
No, no.
I don't even know what's happening anymore.
Never mind, actually. So what was everyone's general thoughts about the movie? They didn't, if there were things that didn't come up before.
It was pretty.
It was super pretty.
Yeah.
It was too pretty.
I think it was prettier than the first two parts.
It was definitely prettier than the first two parts.
I think that Soda had good fights, but like where that style of animation really excelled was in poses. So like in, there are lots of iconic shots of the Digimon and of especially faces. Like he really got faces nailed down, especially like Tai's crazy expressions throughout the whole movie. But where this, the animation in this movie like really excelled in fights.
The fights were so good.
So good.
So much more dynamic and, like, not even just so dynamic, good. Not even, like, that there's more strategies. Like, everything was so... It's not that, like, there were more frames, that there was more, like, CG... Not CGI, but like, not like it was just more smoke and, like, particle effects. It was just that, like, the direction and the, like, cinematography might not be the best word because there aren't actually cameras, but the, like... The way things were framed, there were like there were just so many things. There were moments where Flame Jamon would attack and like go past the camera and you would like see his eye for like a brief second as he was flying by. And it was like moments like that, moments like there were a lot of small details that made it feel much more real and present and active.
I just want to watch anything that Flame Jamon did in a fight over and over again. <on loop. laughs>
So I looked up the director because I was like, whoever directed this must have been like amazing, because it didn't just seem like it was like a higher budget. It seemed like there was a lot of really smart decisions in how to frame the fights that made them seem so much more dynamic. But the director was Shigeyasu Yamauchi, and I looked up the things they did, and like there weren't really any other things that stood out to me. There he or she, I don't know gender, worked on a bunch of like OVAs for like Dragon Ball Z and a lot of like individual episodes.
Some of those are actually really good.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Or that's what my, you know, middle school self is telling me. I haven't seen them in a long time.
Yeah. I sometimes feel like I'm like, oh, that thing was really awesome. Oh, wait, that was middle school me. I don't know if I trust that anymore. Yeah, so they worked on like, oh, it looks like most of these Dragon Ball Z movies that I saw him credited with weren't actually direction. There were a couple that were direction, but some of these, one of these he's listed, Dragon Ball Z, the movie 3, he's listed as continuity, which apparently is a role, according to Anime News Network, which this movie could have had some help with, but yeah, the other things, it's like, he did like individual episodes here and there, but doesn't really have like, I was expecting there to be like some big thing he'd done that everyone would have heard of, because this is really good. And, oh, and there was one other like really subdued part in the Japanese version that I'm pretty sure was cut out in the English dub, where it shows Wallace's flashback of like playing with Chocomon and Gummimon on a bike, and like they're on a road and the bike goes down the road and like goes off frame off the road, and then like a couple seconds later the car that they're hitchhiking on comes on the other side of the road. And I thought that was a really cool way to blend the flashback with the real world and show that they're back where he grew up in a way that was really cool.
Cool beans.
Cool animation beans.
I'm sorry, I got distracted because our lovely neighbors are playing music so loud that the floor is like vibrating. I hate these people. I hope they listen to this podcast so they know that I hate them.
Anyway, after a couple comments on our Dark Ocean episode, I hadn't really realized that this had some Lovecraftian elements when I watched it before, so I was kind of expecting to be blown away by that, and it was kind of disappointed. It kind of felt like Lovecraft light, at least how I wrote in my notes, because Wendigomon is based on a Lovecraftian creature called the Wendigo, which I wrote this down somewhere. It's not originally from Lovecraft lore. It's based on a Native American myth of the, oh god, Ashley, how do I pronounce this?
God, I'm not gonna know.
it's a myth. It's a legend from the Algonquin people.
Algonquin. Wait, I actually can pronounce that.
who were along the Atlantic coast and Great Lakes region of the United States and Canada. It's apparently like a demonic half-beast creature. And that was expounded on by Algernon Blackwood in a story called The Wendigo, which was the basis for a part of Lovecraftian literature written by August Derleth called Ithaqua, which has a creature called the Windwalker or the Wendigo. And that's the... So it's a long lineage. And it's interesting how it comes from the U.S. Like, I thought that was an interesting twist. I didn't really expect that, like, this movie set in the U.S., like, actually does use a myth from the U.S. for the villain, which is pretty cool. It was kind of missing all the cosmic horror that makes the Dark Ocean episode so frightening. We still get Kari kind of hearing Wendigomon beckoning her, and she's kind of like entranced by it. But it's kind of like in the Dark Ocean episode, what Kari is being entranced and also being kidnapped. And with the split between Tai and others being kidnapped and Kari being the one who's entranced by it, like, you don't really feel that same... It's not quite as dark, where, like, it's much more dark when she's the one who is being hurt and she's also entranced by it. When it's, like, other people being hurt and she's entranced, it's like, and the emotions of Wendigomon / Chocomon / Trubimon / every other form that he goes through are so solidly rooted in understandable and empathetic human emotions that, like, it doesn't feel outside of our understanding. You know, it feels like, yeah, he was sad and he was really sad that he digivolved and came evil, you know. Well, he had a virus and then became sad or whatever. That expounded his power. But whereas, like, what's his name? Cthulhumon, Dagumon is so much more like, we have no idea what's going on there. But I don't know too much about Lovecraftian literature. So maybe this is another component of stuff. Like, the literature can go have lots of different things. Maybe this is one of them. I don't know. So is there a point in doing favorites, or did we kind of mention our favorite things before?
No. Yes. My favorite thing is that we finally got to Terriermon.
Oh my goodness.
I forgot that you're so obsessed with Harrymon.
I actually said that too, but only specifically because of the fight between him and Wendigomon in the very beginning of the movie. It was like super badass.
Terriermon is the best. That's all I have to say for favorites.
And my favorite moment was, like I said, anything that had Flamedramon fighting.
Yeah, I liked how what Terriermon had his... Not really peaceful, like, not really comedical, but just, like, made everyone, I don't know, you know, like, brought everyone, like, made everyone happy. He doesn't say Momentai yet, but he still has that same essence. my favorite aspect of the movie is the fight animation. So, and I already talked about that in depth. So this will be, like, a minute-long favorites segment.
Yeah.
A big subject of debate for this movie is the canonicity. Oh, the canonicity. I don't even know where to begin with this because it's a big topic for debate, but okay. So there are some pretty clear things that make it seem non-canonical. You know, we have...
Yes.
We have Angelmon appearing without a crest, first of all. Then we have Angemon and Angelmon warped digivolving to their mega forms, which are never shown again, and without any explanation for that power. With the caveat that happens after... Cherubimon has kind of like tainted the world into this dark form and like made everyone regress to their childhood state. So it's like, you know, that could be some weird power explained by that. But the fact that no one ever discusses it or finds it bizarre they're able to do it and no one like questions the mechanics lends credence to the argument that maybe this isn't canonical. What else? Is there anything? There's also the fact that Willis is mentioned in the rest of Zero Two because they wanted to make it. They clearly wanted to fit him in better. But Wallace in the Japanese version is never mentioned again after this movie or before. which is especially jarring when they go to the US in the World Tour arc and when all the Digidestin around the world appear at the end of Zero Two.
Well, they don't go to Colorado.
Yeah. But he doesn't live in Colorado. He lives in New York City.
That's true. He lives in New York City.
That's true.
That's the argument that's frequently brought up. Like, he's too far away. He lives in Colorado.
Well, it was Christmas break. He was probably visiting his family in Colorado.
That's plausible.
I assumed his family lived in New York.
His mom lives in New York, obviously. But, like, didn't he say that he still had, like, family and that's
he did
where he was going?
Yeah. That's true. I'm not sure if that was in the Japanese version, which... The Japanese version is usually where this talk of canonicity occurs because the dub goes so far towards, you know, like, there are lots of lines in the beginnings here, too, where Izzy talks about, like, his friend Willis in America and stuff, so, yeah. Oh, side note from before that, like, one thing I totally did not realize about the Japanese version is that Wallace makes, like, spends so much time in the movie talking to his mom, and, like, it's kind of a weird theme, but I don't know, I couldn't really understand the purpose of it, unless it was to pad time. But anyway, so the tradition that I've observed, and I've heard others describe, but I don't know any of this for sure, is that in Japan, anime has a much looser relationship with canon, with canonicity, than we do in the West. That it's kind of the same way that, like, early sitcoms, you know, like from, like, decades ago, would swap out actors and it wouldn't even be a question. It would just be like, you know, they make a joke about it and then, like, they move on. It wouldn't be a big deal. But, like, nowadays, to have, like, a drama or a sitcom on national television that, like, swaps out a character, like, that wouldn't happen. Like, the character would be killed off or would move away or something if they had to replace the actor. Like, they would never, it's kind of something that, like, the audience has changed to not accept that anymore. But anyway, so apparently in Japan, like, so many OVAs come out that, like, are connected to the anime storyline, but are not meant to actually be, like, in the same canon timeline.
I mean, isn't that, like, superhero comics for us, though? They all have, like, multiple universes.
Yeah, the movie universe is considered separate from the comic universe in most, in DC Comics and Marvel Comics. Like, they have, it's Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is different from comics verse. And even there's different continuities across the comics, so.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Right, but yeah. I'm not an expert in comics at all. Like, I barely read, like, I've read Ms. Marvel, I think is the only vaguely superhero comic I've even read in the past ever. But my understanding of that is that they actually do a lot of mental gymnastics to have timelines. And there are, like, a million of them and lots of, like, world-ending events where, like, timelines cross over and things are rebooted and all that. But, like, that they explain that they're... is a lot of purposeful attempts to have reasons for all that stuff, have all the convoluted canonicity happening. I think the more interesting comparison is Doctor Who, which Doctor Who had a lot of different incarnations, and some of those are less canonical than others. I've heard the debate come up in that community more because some of them are, like, it's unclear whether they're considered part of the canon or not.
Hmm.
So, I don't know. I mean, it's certainly something I observed in anime like Bleach, but that's really the only one I've had experience with. And it's been a while since I've seen a Bleach movie. I remember lots of movies that were, you know, would feature some character that would be introduced, it'd be a big deal for the movie, and they never mentioned again. And that was kind of just the norm.
It's pretty common across...
How is it different from, like, filler? I mean, we still refer to it as filler. Does that make it canonical? Like,
filler's not canonical in most situations.
I guess filler's weird because, like, I think filler handled well would be canonical, but it's when it becomes, like, this is clearly not the manga material, and this is the manga material, and the manga material isn't going to mention the non-manga material. Like, I don't know. I guess that is common. Because we have series like Bleach, too.
If we're bringing in filler and stuff into this, we could make a statement that's... We could state that there's a difference between canonical and this happened. In that the filler happened in the context of the anime, but if it wasn't in the manga, it still happened, but it's not canonical.
I don't see what your distinction is. What does it mean for something to have happened but not be canonical?
It's an arbitrary distinction completely, but, like, if something happens but it has no bearing on the rest of the story, then what's the point of deciding whether or not it happened?
Hmm.
Yeah.
If a tree falls in the forest but it doesn't make a sound, is it canonical?
I wish that weren't too long to be a title.
No, we already have our perfect title, come on.
Yeah, smooth jazz.
I see your point. The way I thought of it sometimes is that, like, things make sense to be canonical, like, within a certain context. So, like, the events of this movie are canonical within the context of this movie. They may not be canonical within the context of this show. You know, it's like comparing two different timelines, and, you know, I guess with that, it's kind of like, compared to the series, this movie is like a fun what-if adventure.
Mm-hmm.
But I do see a point that, like, well, I'm also expanding on that, like, situations can be set up where that, like, the events of something could have literally no bearing on further things. And so then it's, like, the question of whether it is canonical or not, like, ultimately doesn't matter. But, and that seems like bad storytelling to me. Like, everything should have impact, you know, like having things in the story that don't actually impact the rest of the events. It's bizarre. But I guess that's how filler is.
I mean, there are arcs of stories, and I don't know. Doesn't seem that weird to me.
The thing is, there are arcs of stories, and like the characters in the next arc shouldn't really forget that the other arc happened, you know? But it is weird when it comes to Zero Two, because it's like, you know, what if the author's intent was that Willis or Wallace was canonical in the universe, but just didn't have a time to bring it up, you know? And it's like, if the author then comes out and says, actually, it was canonical, like, I always intended Wallace to be in the same universe, does that author's opinion change the actual work? Not really. I mean, if we believe in Death the Author, and then, okay, you can argue that, and then it comes to arguing Death the Author instead of arguing canonicity. But anyway, it's weird.
I see. So it's like, then it's like, is Kurosami a real thing just because some people could read it that way and the creators said it was real? Like,
I think it's a related question, but not really the same. Not quite the
Dumbledore
same.
Dumbledore being gay?
Is that right, I mean, I think,
more
yeah.
relatable? I don't know. It's kind of debatable.
The thing is, those are like, when it comes to those questions, when it comes to the creators intending Kurosami to be a relationship, when it comes to J.K. Rowling intending Dumbledore to be gay, like, my opinion on those is that, like, I don't know, like, you can have multiple readings of the text, and having those opinions from the author informs reading, but shouldn't be the ultimate, here is how you read it,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so I guess in this case, when the ultimate question it comes down to is, like, whether the creators planned for this to be canonical or not. Like, there are two possible answers: that yes, in which case it doesn't matter what they planned, or no, they didn't plan it for canonical, and then it's not. So it's like, it still seems like, given that we don't know what their answer is, there are two valid readings of this as being canonical or being not canonical. I don't know. I find it interesting that it seems like there's kind of a negative impression of the dub for trying to make it canonical, you know, for trying to refer to Willis in other contexts in the show. But I think that's kind of grouped in with the negative impression of the dub trying to change things in general. But I think it's admirable to where, as a Western audience might be more inclined to be concerned about canonicity than a Japanese audience is more accustomed to these kind of OVAs that are more what-if scenarios, to try to make it fit better with that. Especially given they know it in advance and stuff, you know, like, I don't really blame them for trying to do that. But it does call into question other things that are like, so if Willis is canonical, then, like, can they at any point digivolve to Mega if they want to? Like,
Yes. They just didn't want to hard enough.
Yeah.
Nope. Not when the world was ending, or when the world was any other time, or third time.
Nope.
But if someone's friend is, like, sad, then...
Then it's fine.
Yep. Yeah, I guess I'm sad that, like... I was kind of hoping that when we came to this question, when we came to this movie, and we came to this discussion of canonicity, we would come out with one answer. We'd come out with, like, we would solve the problem. You know, like, we'd solve the debate, you know?
Why would I ever do that?
We are going to solve Digimon.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of Serial, the recent podcast, and, like, people's expectation for it of thinking that, like, this piece of investigative journalism would solve the murder and give them all these answers. And that was my hopes for the section, for the segment. And nope, disappointed.
Sorry to disappoint you. I have to get charger.
I disappointed myself.
I was thinking about, as we saw, Wendigomon digivolve into Antilamon and then Cherubimon or Karubimon, or however you're supposed to pronounce that, about the way evil works in Digimon, and the way there are, in Digimon as a whole, not just in this movie, and there are different types of evil, I think. There's, you know, something infected this and made it bad, and then there's, this was bad all along, like we were talking about the Dark Ocean episode, and how Dagomon is sort of just, like, unknowable evil, and, you know, Daemon, like, who knows what was up with him, and... But then there's the Dark Spore kids who had a weakness that got out of hand. And in this one, we have Chocomon, who was infected with a virus and grew out of control. And the idea of growing outside of one's set time as a problem is fascinating in light of what we've discussed you know, as these kids matured and became more good. And, you know, Cherubimon appears in Frontier as well. Spoilers. And he's evil again. And Antilamon starts out in Tamers as, you know, a technically evil Digimon. I don't actually know what's up with the Devas. I don't remember. and it sort of begs the question, like, is this inevitable? Like,
It raises the question.
Is Lopmon, Wendigomon, Antilamon, Cherubimon always going to be open to an evil influence? Is the evil influence something that is inherent in that line? Especially when you've got Terriermon on the other side, who has no problems ever, apparently.
Yeah. Momentai.
Spoiler alert, Ashley.
No.
And Kari responded to Wendigomon's evil or whatever as, this Digimon needs help. And she responded to the corrupted Divermon, or that weren't actually Divermon, as, they need help. And her light worked on them until it didn't. So it worked on the corruption, but not on the fact that they are creepy.
Just like, that's the fact that they have an inherent creepiness.
Yeah. And then, I mean, even going back to Adventure, when Tai makes Greymon digivolve out of sync, he becomes Skull Greymon, and that's a very bad thing. And, you know, like, are there different... Is there evil you can combat and evil you can reform? And where is the line? And what is... How do you fix it? I mean, this movie says you fix it by starting over. You blow it up and kill it and start over.
That's how these things normally go.
You go back to the beginning. Destroy! Well,
there's like a subtle line there between like what Kokomon, Chocomon, Cherubimon, Kirbymon, whatever, always once throughout the movie is to reset things, make things go back to, like, he's been corrupted and like grown, I assume, kind of out of his control, and he wants to like correct that, go back to time before he was corrupted and all that. And Willis Wallace eventually is like, no, like, we can't go back, like, we have to like live with our consequences and like whatever.
Does he?
And well, I can't remember the exact line, but there was definitely a point where he's like, we can't go back, this is not going to happen. And
he's like, we're already as back as we can go, can't go back anymore.
And it's also like the way that the kids, especially, so this is a weird part of the dub where they all do like, I forget, like all the armored Digimon like say something, and then the kids are just like, oh, they're so cool. And I'm like, you just have been like losing to Cherubimon. Like, why are you all like, oh, they're so cool? And it's because in the original Japanese version, they all take a stance that's like, stop playing with us. Like, we're here to like fight, stop playing with us. And then they're like, it kind of makes more sense. But anyway, they kind of take a stand against trying to go back and revert things. But I mean, that is kind of exactly what happens with, like, they destroy Cherubimon and then he gets reborn. And we assume that things do go back to the beginning. So it's like, I don't know if that's, it feels like a kind of muddled lesson.
Yeah.
It's a very muddled lesson. That is what I kept thinking. Well, isn't that also another reason why this might not be canon? Because, like, when Digimon was destroyed in the real world, but then he was reborn.
We still don't know for sure if killing someone in the real world necessitates that they can't come back.
Right, and I meant to mention this in the canon section, I've forgotten. It's like, that's the thing, we don't know that information, and like, this movie is a source of evidence, but we don't even know if this movie is considered canon or not, so it's like, so many different levels, and... In the series itself, the Digimon that we see destroyed in the real world who persist in some way are Wizardmon, who returns as a ghost, Myotismon, who returns as fog, and then Oikawa, etc. And both of those, Wizardmon isn't even like from the digital world, it's like from Witchelny, whatever, and like weird, whatever. And Myotismon is like so overpowered, and they both have weird circumstances around them.
I mean, it's debatable whether or not Myotismon died in the first place if he was still around as fog.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And like he has a history of not dying when they think he's dead. So, and then like the other cases where we see Digimon dying in the real world are either villains that we don't care to check in on, or it's the case of, it's the Leomon problem of Zero Two. I should frame it that way. Like, Leomon dies tragically in Adventure and should be reborn according to the logic and mechanics of everything else set up, and they forgot to check in on him in Zero Two. Like, what are the Pumpkinmon and Gotsumon die tragically in the real world, and it's impossible to tell if that's, you know, they are gone for good and don't exist anymore, or they just forgot to check in on them in Zero Two. And they, I think Matt and TK even have a moment in that reunion episode where they're like, they go back to Shibuya and like look at the windows and like, oh, so sad. And I'm like, why don't you like talk about whether he's alive or whether they're alive or not? Like, it's silly. And yeah, I feel like this movie, the two branching conditions, if it's canon, yes, this provides evidence that Digimon, but like they should be reborn in the digital world, not in the human world.
Yeah. Doesn't he have to go to Primary Village?
Willis is too busy jetting across the United States to go to Primary Village.
Right.
I mean, also they were born outside the digital world, so that's kind of weird. Like they came out of a computer like Agumon.
That is kind
of
weird.
But yeah. Yeah, huh. There's a lot of weird. There's a lot of Digimon happens outside the realm of explained mechanics. So.
Yeah, but then this movie just really throws them all for a loop.
Yeah. But so back to the topic of Lopmon, the Lopmon line always being evil. I think it's worth at least mentioning that like part of that is just, part of that is a likely explanation that are the, what's it called? The, when it's like you take this most simple explanation for something, Occam's Razor. What I consider the Occam's Razor's explanation for that is that he is, you know, they set up, Digimon has a lot of ideas that it returns to.
Mm-hmm.
That I kind of think of like when they're developing a new story, it's like, well, this part worked, let's like pull that in. And so that's why, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that like from the Adventure Zero Two universe is pulled into Tamers and pulled forward to Frontier and stuff. So like in Zero Two, we got the introduction of the Celestial Beasts or the Holy Digimon, whatever they're called. And that's like compounded on in Zero Two, and like Terrymon and Lopmon's introduced here, which is in Tamers. And what else is Frontier? Oh, and like Trubimon and stuff is pulled into Frontier. And so, yeah, I mean, that I think of as like the behind-the-scenes possible explanation, but then in the context of the story, yeah, it does seem like there's something about Lopmon that, like, makes him more prone to turning evil.
I just looked it up, and he does have a Digivolution that is not Wendigomon, that actually looks a lot more like an in-between for Lopmon and Entilomon. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, what's his name? Turiamon?
That's a weird name. Wait. Hold on.
Yeah, I looked this up too because I was like, I assumed he had to be shown in the series at some point as a champion without being corrupted, and nope, this never makes an appearance in the show.
Turuyemon? I'm not sure.
Turuye.
It seems very clear that it was sort of meant to go along with Susie since she and Henry were Chinese-ish, but...
Interesting.
Yeah, it's some sort of... I don't know.
Some sort of weird bunny.
Yes.
But
yes.
Yeah, I mean, so the other celestial Digimon, let me pull this up.
Seraphimon.
They all have corrupted forms. Yes. Yeah,
so
we saw the trinity we saw in this movie was Cherubimon, Seraphimon, and Magnadramon, but I don't think Magnadramon is typically included in that. It's usually...
No, because usually Anjouwoman would digivolve to Ophanimon, yeah. if you're going along with the whole sort of angel things.
So, then show notes, we'll have the Celestial Digimon, and they all have... So, it's actually weird, because the Cherubimon is the one who is the most... just like a palette swap, kind of. I mean, okay, so that's not true. Trubimon does like have this very different characteristics than Trubimon Evil in terms of like the way their hands are positioned and stuff, but like the difference between Seraphimon and Shadow Seraphimon seems bigger. It's like instead of wings, it goes to bat wings, and Ophanimon has Ophanimon fall down mode, so they all have like that
that's amazing.
Corrupted mode. But I think, I don't know, there's something entrancing about Cherubimon, I think, that is much more so than the other two, who are just kind of like people, whereas Cherubimon is like this, it's very different and scary.
I was going to say, it's frightening.
Yeah. Whoa, Ophanimon fall down mode is cool. Why didn't we ever get to see that?
Because.
Unfair.
Cherubimon just looks like an angelic Easter bunny. Like, that's good Cherubimon.
So have you heard of Mastemon? So the idea, the concept is very strange. Sephirothmon, yeah.
Also an angel, technically.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Did you not know what a Sephiroth is? It's one of the...
Oh, no, yeah. I mean, like, but in Digimon, it's not considered.
Well, I don't know. It's got the Crest of Light on it, maybe. Mm. Oh, yeah, that's the Crest of Light. It's kind of weird. Super ugly.
I found a really good image of this Digimon. Now I can't find it. So it's a DNA digivolution of Angelomon with Lady Devimon.
Really?
Yeah. And it's in Cyber Sleuth.
Cool.
It's pretty badass.
Is it canon? I don't think so.
I mean,
it doesn't look canon.
It's like canon. In the video game, I mean.
Oh, really?
Well, that's not fan art. Yeah, it's from Cyber Sleuth.
I didn't know what Cyber Sleuth was.
Oh, it's the Vita game that everyone wants to be localized.
Oh, the one with the... Okay.
Yeah, they should stop slapping each other and DNA digivolve.
What were we talking... Oh, like, whether Lopmon is inevitably evil. It is weird, I thought, that a lot of this movie is about Wendigomon's emotions, and yet, like, the ultimate cause for the corruption is just, like, some random virus. You know, like, even in the dub tries to explain it more by saying that Willis tried to create...
That an 8-year-old made Diaboromon. Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean... That he made, I found it much more unbelievable that he tried to make a Digimon. Like, I can understand, like, he tried to make a Digimon, and then the virus made it as powerful as Diaboromon was. But even the explanation that Willis gives of trying to create a Digimon, he, like, created a Digi-Egg, which was then corrupted by a virus. There's always, in either version, there's always just a virus that comes in at some point and corrupts things. And, like, it comes out of nowhere and has no origin. And on the one hand, that's, like, creepy and compelling idea, but also, like, it's also just narratively convenient because you don't need to give an explanation for where it came from.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it is... I can't remember the conditions in Frontier for why Trubimon turns evil, but I think there's more to that, but that's probably not important. It is weird that Antilomon... Because Antilomon is so different.
From what?
I don't know. That thought didn't really go anywhere. I'm going to drop it.
Antilomon's so different. Sure.
Well, I mean, like, it doesn't have the same, like, compelling nature of Trubimon being, like, this weird, scary, holy monster thing. But it does fit into the Deva animal theme.
I don't know. I thought Antilomon was pretty scary the first time I saw this movie. Has, like, no expression.
I don't even remember.
And its arms are really long.
Yeah, its face is...
Oh, no.
Weird.
Look, you watch enough Digimon, you know that long arms are always bad.
Just trying to think out of it.
I can't think of any counterexamples because all I can think of is One Piece.
Well, Devimon is a pro example. And who else? Myotismon's arms are pretty long.
Middle Seedramon doesn't have arms, so.
It's true.
It's the only one you can think of. I mean, as I think about this, I'm like, that is true. It is a more, the main Digimon, even when they're not humanoid, they still are much more human-like in that aspect. And it's like, feels like a way that you can kind of make the evil Digimon seem bad and other by making them seem different and weird.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Was there more? What was the cure? You said disease and cure.
Well, the cure was, you know, reset. But I can't agree with that as a viable, because in real life, you can't do that.
Hey guys, I don't like the me that I've become. Can you just kill me and then I'll be reborn? It'll be fine.
Well, we would have to go back to the primary village for you, and we're too busy, like, hitchhiking to Colorado in a single day.
Yeah. Totes possible.
Totes possible.
Yeah, and it is, like... I guess, like, a more meaningful and relevant message would be had it come down to a more emotional conclusion where they forgave him and then, or, like, you know, like, where, like, it's okay, and then he, like, kind of lost the virus. Like, he was kind of, his hate was a necessary component of the virus's, like, a symbiotic, not symbiotic, a, like, parasitic relationship where, like, once he stopped hating, the virus had nothing to live on and died away and he became good or something like that. And...
Well, that would have been a really boring ending. Like, there would have been, like, so much less explosions. That's not cool.
Well, the thing is, like, it could have happened once Magnemon, once Magnemon and Rapamon were inside, whatever. You know, like, after the hell of that fight, like, I forget how they actually... I don't think they, like, the actual final...
They blew him up from the inside. Except they didn't show it. He just kind of like fell apart.
I mean, there are ways. There are ways it could have done. It could have been like they went inside his inner consciousness to the virus, and you know, Trubimon like stopped being hateful, so then the virus started like crippling and like falling apart, and then they blew up the virus. You know, like, it's possible, but clearly what they wanted to go for is this, like, he's gone, we need to get over that. And so that is a different kind of lesson, which I think is also relevant, that like it was about Willis learning to let go of Kokomon, Chocomon, Wendigomon, Drubimon, and that is an interesting and important lesson too, although also muddled by the fact that he comes back, so that's weird. But maybe, I don't know, it also never seemed like Willis's attachment to Chocomon, Kokomon, Wendigomon, Drubimon was the driving force that, you know, like, he was kind of incidentally, like, he had kept dealing with it, but he wasn't the one, it didn't seem like he was so, you know, it's not like he was kept in this world by Willis's attachment to him, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. He was kept in the world by his attachment to Willis.
Right. It wasn't really mutual. So, yeah, very muddled.
I just feel like it's, like, because it's already a mixed metaphor of, like, Digimon are alive, but also they're just data. So, like, the resetting thing makes sense if you're like, well, my computer has a really nasty virus, I'm just gonna, like, wipe it and then, like, you know, put the data on a hard drive and then wipe it and then put good things back onto it or whatever. But, like, I don't know. Digimon, what are you?
I would like to think that the intent wasn't that when Chocomon comes back, he is not, it's not that he like forgets everything and is completely wipe slate or a completely clean slate. And I think, I keep trying to find meaning in this, and I think there is something there that like only when they're able to let go of him and like move on, is he able to come back. And I swear I had a coherent thread in my thought while you were talking, and like I had it.
I had it,
but then actually expounding on it and explaining it, it fell apart, just like slipped through my hands.
One aside I would like to make on, you know, going back to whether or not it's sort of inevitable for Lopmon to be evil, or at least be, like,
be susceptible to evil.
That's about, yeah, be susceptible to evil. There are a lot, like, you could sort of say that Lopmon is a recolor of, is a dark recolor of Terriermon, right? There's other slight differences, like the horns, but there are other Digimon that are like that too. There's Tsukaimon, who is like Dark Patamon.
Mm.
And God, there was one other that I can't remember. I think it was a recolor of Betamon. Or actually,
I mean, there were the more obvious ones like Black Agumon, Black Agumon too.
Well, those are too obvious.
Yeah.
So obvious, I forgot about it. And like Tsukaimon is like obviously evil. It acts as a familiar for Devimon, according to the Digimon Wiki. And, you know, its next form is either Devidramon or Devimon. Like, yo.
It is kind of cool how you just take Patamon's wings and recolor it. Like, they go from being, like, innocent little wings and recolor them, and it's like, oh, God, it's a bat.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. It's like, suddenly you realize it was like that all along.
Yeah, and I never really thought of Lopmon, like, is kind of, and I think in almost every incarnation aside from Frontier, is almost defined by Terriermon, like, is always the partner, is like the sibling of Terriermon.
Yeah.
You know? And I guess Frontier is a weird exception to that.
It's a weird exception because he just starts out as Cherubimon. There just, like, isn't a backstory there.
In Frontier?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Okay, they beat him and he turns back to Lopmon, maybe? Like, that might have happened?
That definitely happens. There's, like, at least one shot I saw of
all three of them.
Yeah, all three of the rookie forms. And I'm like, yeah. My vague reflection of the series, that happens on the moon, which confuses me, because, like, what? But I think it might happen on the moon? I don't know.
I don't think so.
Does Digiworld have a moon?
Yes, it has several, actually. I think it has three.
Wait, so did they actually go to the moon in Frontier?
They do actually go to the moon, yes. That was the thing that happened. They took a train to the moon.
Of course.
Of course.
Duh. I don't know about you guys, but, like, this movie actually made me feel incredibly sad.
Aww. Wow.
There was one point in the Japanese version where I was like, I'm kind of tearing up. I don't know what's happening right now.
No, that was me at the end of O2. I only watched the dub of this.
Yeah, so. Well, I don't know. It's still the same, like, the idea of going back to where you've been. I'm like, that's so adorable and painful. Oh my god, please stop. I wish I was, like, 10 again.
Ashley, I have advice for you.
Do you? What?
I have heard. I'm
the problem, not you. Get over it.
Okay.
Exactly.
The best part of the movie.
Get over it, Ashley.
No, couldn't. I refuse.
But no, I agree. It's a sad movie.
Sad movie. I don't know, but it really, you know, encapsulated the difference between, you know, Digimon and Pokemon, where Digimon's like, you must grow up. Grow up even if you don't want to, because that's what happens. Get over it.
Yeah.
And I feel like you definitely get evidence that, like, Willis has really tried hard to go back in every way.
I don't know. He's not wearing the overalls from when he was a kid.
But he tries so hard. But then, like, I don't know. I feel like Terriermon Digivolving was evidence of him, like, slowly getting over it. He's seen other Digimon. At some point, Davis does even blatantly say, he's like, after they destroy Terriermon or whatever, Davis is like, you gotta learn that, like, Digimon, they just come back. And I'm like, Davis, that's so callous.
Yeah.
What are you about right now?
Especially since, like, you know, setting-wise, this is right after they killed, after Wormmon died.
Oh my god.
Davis is a great friend. Okay, guys.
Davis, Ken, you just... He's gonna come back. It's fine.
Yeah, I feel kind of bad that, like, this movie was very emotional. And I feel like it's less impactful in the dub. So, like, both versions have that trade-off. And I feel like the dub is, like, accelerated to the point where you don't really get that emotional impact. But also the Japanese version is so slow that it's kind of also reduced. Yeah. And I feel like having watched both and, like, taking lots of notes, I feel like I miss some of that, and I kind of regret that. But, like, it makes me kind of wish I had just watched it without worrying about taking notes, because, like, I spent so much time, like, in the downtime, like, writing down thoughts instead of, you know, paying lots of attention to things. And, I mean, the one moment that, like, made me feel that kind of, like, tinge of sadness. Is tinge even a word? Ting?
Tinge is a word, yes.
Yes, tinge. Yes.
The one thing that made me feel that tinge of sadness was that shot I talked about before with the director, or I mentioned it in the context of the director, like a really well-crafted shot of the flashback of Wallace and Gummimon and Chocomon and them biking off screen and then the car coming on screen. And it was like the mix of nostalgia with the current day. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I know what you mean about the... I worried less about taking notes while watching the Japanese version, because I was like, whatever. Our segments are, like, Ridiculous Dialogue Draft is, you know, just for the English version, so there's less to pay attention to in that way. But yeah, the Japanese is pretty slow. I realize it's because they actually spend a lot of time showing signs, like Interstate 80 signs and stuff, like... They just linger on that for a couple seconds at a time. It's really weird.
I mean, some of that made it into the dub, too.
Yeah, but it's way more.
I gotta watch it in Japanese. It's been a while.
It's like, thinking about the differences between the two, I'm like, I guess the fight scenes are longer in Japanese, and there's just a lot more signs. Like, I don't know. And that middle scene where between Davis, Wallace, and Gummimon is longer in Japanese, where they're like in the woods at night or whatever.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah. But like, I think I also felt particularly sad for this because it's also like, you know, I'm always like, oh, when I go back to Philadelphia, I'll feel so much happier, like I'm going to my more thing I consider more home. But every time I go back there now, I'm like, this just makes me feel worse because, like, I know I'm just going to leave in like a week or two. It's aww. Also like it doesn't live up to my nostalgic memories of it because I get older each time I go back. And like what? The people that I know there change in the year or whatever that I'm not there. And so like it just like constantly compounds on itself. And I'm like, no, this is a terrible feeling. And I don't know. I honestly cannot reset anything to make that feeling go away.
You have to destroy, Ashley.
I have to destroy.
I am personally much more tied to memories of places than people. So for me, it's like I can actually, like when I go back to things, I am actually like instantly, I don't know if it makes me happy, but like it kind of fulfills that nostalgic itch in a way that like if it's more tied to people, like you can never really reset the people, but you can always reset the location. Not always. Most of the time you can reset the location.
I mean, when you go back to the like place that you lived previously, there's always going to be differences. And then like when you live there and those changes happen very slowly, you just become acclimated to them. But when you go back and they're just there, you're like, well, this is jarring and different.
So
you don't. So when you go back to places, you're like, yeah, this is totally cool.
Yeah.
It's because you can't go home, Ashley.
I can't go home. I honestly feel like the only way to get that feeling to go away is that everything does drastically change and then it just has no meaning. Not that it resets, it's just that everything is different and so it doesn't matter anymore.
The end.
Well, Digimon always stays the same.
Yeah.
It's always there.
Especially that digital world. That thing never gets moved around and reset.
I mean the show, actually.
No.
Like, for us, have you not noticed that, like, this is all relevant to us talking at the show? Like, that, you know, it's something that we experienced 15 years ago that, like, we go back to now and we get completely different. I don't know, I guess this is kind of similar. Behind the scenes, about halfway through this podcast, we stopped recording for the day and started the next morning, and hopefully you don't notice. But anyway, in that time, I actually watched the next movie we're discussing, Revenge of Diaboromon, and, like, spoiler for the next podcast, like, had very different impression of it from when I last saw it. And the other weird thing was that, like, there are memories of that movie that I have that I, like, just plotting it out in, like, a timeline of when it came out in the dub and stuff that I clearly remembered being, you know, from when the initial watch of Digimon around the time when Zero Two came out 15 years ago that are not, like, they're from, these memories are from 8 years ago, not 15, and, like, they just blend all together. And it's also a testament to the fact that, like, the things we think of as reality in the past, like, aren't necessarily true. That is not really relevant to this, but I thought it was interesting.
This is why I didn't bother watching Revenge of Diaboromon before this.
The thing that I wrote down thinking about the topic of growing up and stuff is that Willis is the first character we've seen, and Wallace too, who explicitly don't refer to the Digimon by their Digivolutions. Like,
throughout the
movie refers to, in both versions he refers to Wendigomon as Chocomon or Kogomon. Mm-hmm. And in the Japanese, I think in the dub, he refers to Terrymon as Terrymon. But in the dub, in the Japanese version, he refers to Terrymon as Gummimon. And
Terrymon doesn't correct him?
Yeah, exactly. So it makes sense for Chocomon and Wendigomon, because it's like...
He can't talk. He doesn't really
talk. Yeah, he doesn't talk. Yeah. And there's no, like, digi-analyzer. So the audience doesn't really have a way to know that he has these new forms. And the characters in the show don't really have a way to know either. So it makes sense in some way. Mm-hmm. But... yeah, Terrymon should just be like, dude, I'm Terrymon, not Gummimon. Like, dude, come on, not cool. But
he never says that.
Nope. And even with the way he refers to Wendigomon as Chocomon, like, even with the in-universe explanation for why that doesn't happen, I think there's something to the fact that it's the first character we see who does this consistently. And it is... it made me think about how, like, he is not really willing to let them grow up yet. Like, and I mean, I guess Wendigomon has, like, unnaturally... growing up faster than he should have, like Skull Greymon. Mm-hmm. But I kind of wish there was a moment later on where he started referring to them by their actual names, because, I don't know, it was that's a moment of the first episode of Venture that I really liked, where the kids are so fast to pick up on the Digimon's preferred names and, like, willing to go with the punches in that regard. And mm-hmm. Willis and Wallace are definitely not, like, or at least... It's definitely a contrast.
Does Terrymon even, like, when he digivolves to Gargomon, does he mention that he he's Gargomon? Like, does he say his name?
I don't think so. Huh. I don't think they ever say Gargomon or Wendigomon.
No, they never say Wendigomon.
Definitely never say Wendigomon.
So, Pada just reacts! What is the segment? This segment is our reacting to new Digimon, to images, to sound clips. For this episode, I actually have only brought new Digimon. I didn't really capture any images and sound clips or anything. Mostly because a lot of those are, like, bad animation or, like, otherwise funny things, and this movie didn't really have much of that, aside from just, like, good animation.
A plus.
And we reacted to some other things. We already reacted to, like, Wallace's Mama Me and Summer Rewind and stuff like that. So the first new Digimon we meet is Gummimon and Kokomon/Hokomon, right? It's both, right?
It's Kokomon in English. I don't know what it is in Japanese.
Yeah, it's Chokomon.
Mm. I see. So, yeah, so it's Kokomon in English and Chokomon in Japanese. And they are the baby forms of Terrymon and Lopmon. We never see Lopmon in this movie, do we?
Nope.
Okay, so these are the baby Digimon that Wallace gets. And they're meh. They're like little babies.
They're babies.
Babies. The next new Digimon we meet is Terrymon. Doh Terrymon.
Well, we all Terrymon! Know how Ash feels about that.
Terrymon! Terrymon is the best. He is the best Digimon in this entire movie.
And I mean,
he's the best Digimon ever.
Yeah. And the franchise, yes.
I'm inclined to agree. I mean, he's not my favorite. He definitely has the most personality.
Yes. He's also adorable and green. So, like, you know, he hits every criterion.
Is Terrymon really green? I guess so.
Yes, Terrymon is green. He has green striped things.
Stop picking on me for being colorblind.
Because you don't believe people who aren't colorblind. It's infuriating.
I have to believe things in my own eyes, Ashley.
Okay. No. He's white with green accents.
So the next Digimon was... So this was bringing it before, but anyway. Is it Wendigomon or Wendigomon? You guys keep saying you guys keep emphasizing the dig, like, Wendigomon, and I keep saying Wendigomon.
Wendigo.
How do you know?
I looked it up.
Wendigo.
So I was right?
Yes. But I don't know if that's how you pronounce the Digimon, because they never say this Digimon's name.
Yeah. This Digimon, he's all right. It's kind of...
He's ugly!
Yeah, he's... I mean, if I had to choose one of, like, Lopmon's evolutions for him to be in for most of the movie, it would not be Wendigomon. It would be Antilamon.
It would be Antilamon!
Yeah. But he's, like, effectively creepy, you know?
Antilamon or... That Digimon that we cannot pronounce. Oh. I think he's just more ugly and brutish than creepy.
Oh, you're mean.
Bunnies should be cuter, okay?
And Gargomon. Gargomon's pretty cool.
Gargomon's all right.
He has pants now.
Ashley, no! Spoiler! but yeah, he's... I do remember finding it jarring both in this and Tamers, because it's like, it is a weird evolution, right? Like, the guns
really.
And everything. Well, it's bizarre. Like, no other Digimon when they Digimon just, like, get lots of guns out of nowhere, and then that aspect of it seems...
Are you sure about that?
What about Paildramon?
What about where Garurumon to Metal Garurumon?
So those are like missiles, and there is something I consider different between having guns, having projectiles of some form, and like the blatant, like, his arms are machine guns, you know, like...
Okay, what about
the imagery?
What about
there?
Deputymon? Deputymon is a gun.
Sure, but it's not like Agumon Digivolved Deputymon, you know, like, that's what I find bizarre.
True.
And... I mean, I don't find it bizarre anymore, because, like, I've, you know, Terrymon and Gargomon by association are, like, iconic in my memory since watching Tamers, but I remember, like, this is what I recall being my impression as a kid who saw the movie the first time. So, Antilamon.
He's a thing.
Antilamon is awesome.
Yeah. We don't really get much of it. Antilamon's kind of like a bridge between Wendigomon and Trubimon in this movie.
But while he was there, he was very creepy, and I appreciated that. Just like silently drops into the water, like, yo.
Yeah. Cherubimon. We talked about Cherubimon a lot before. But
yeah,
I think he works really well as a creepy clown-ish holy thing.
He's pretty creepy.
Both in the good and evil forms.
He was full of, like, shimmering gross stuff, though. That was weird.
I think I actually find him creepier in his good form, because he's just like...
The stripes are weird.
I think it's the smile.
Yeah?
Like, his smile, like, it is just creepy. Like, he's just like, play with me. I will hug you.
Nah.
Seriously. Yeah, he looks like a creepy angel bunny gone wrong.
See, I think if the stripes were not there on his face, then his smile would not be as creepy.
It's true.
It's the stripes.
Hmm.
The stripes definitely add creepiness.
Also, his face is kind of another Coromon.
Everything is Coromon.
It's true. Once you realize it. Seraphimon and Magnemon we see like for like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
But
I'm neutral on Seraphimon, but I like Magnemon.
Really? I like Seraphimon and I don't like Magnemon, so.
Magnemon's pretty. And like badass.
Magnemon's just so much less cool than Ophanimon though.
I don't know.
I would be more accepting of Magnemon if I didn't also know that there was an alternative Ophanimon form. But knowing there's Ophanimon, I'm just like, I write off Magnemon.
I don't know. I just kind of like the idea of bringing Gatomon back in a way and making that kind of... You can still be a cat and also an angel and super, super powerful.
There's something I really dislike, though, about the, like, the imagery of Seraphimon being circled by Magnemon. Like, it feels very much like a human and his pet.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, Gatomon's more than just a pet. Come on.
It's true.
And we meet the guard that the Garden Arm Revolution, the Golden Arm Revolutions, Magnemon and Rapidmon. We've already met Magnemon, depending on when you see the movie, but so I guess we'll just respond to Rapidmon. He's okay.
He's okay.
These golden things are not as cool.
Yeah, Magnemon is cooler.
I don't think he's as cool as Magnemon.
Yeah.
But I mean, I remember being hyped by them as a kid. Now I'm just like, okay, sure, yeah. They're not as like interesting as Seraphimon and Magnemon, which is sad. Because that's the whole point of them. Whatever, that's like, makes no sense.
This is so new to me. I have so many unanswered questions.
The movie.
Why didn't Seraphimon and Magnemon take care of Cherubim?
Yes, this is the biggest question.
I mean, they are attacked, you know, like, they do de-digivolve by, they don't choose to, you know, it's like, it's one attack and they're dead, and it's like, not dead, but you know what I mean, they de-digivolve.
But that makes no sense.
They were trying to get the, like, the
golden armor digimental.
Yeah, they weren't trying to do anything else.
Yeah. I can kind of justify this by maybe thinking that Trubman's corrupted form is... more effective against Angel. Like, maybe he's not really prone to the influence of angels anymore and is more effective against angels, maybe, possibly. I'm stretching things a lot.
I mean, my stretch was, like, they are not actually mature enough to handle those digivolutions and couldn't stay in that form for longer than the 2 seconds they had. But they could have taken him.
I like the headcanon, though. Like, that could kind of explain... in some, like, super stretchy kind of way that, like, maybe they've had the pot, like, because of their, like, special hope and light attributes, like, maybe they always had the possibility to go to this form for, like, 2 seconds, but there's no point in doing it because, like, they won't be able to actually attack. But that raises the question of, like, well, if they can do it long enough to release the golden digi eggs, that would help later on. And, yeah, so I think I stretched it too far and it broke.
No, I mean, it was a stretch to start with.
Yeah, man.
How do they travel throughout the U.S. without their parents knowing or caring? Like, it's one thing when they're on Imperial Jamon and, like, takes 5 seconds, but...
There's definitely a cavalierness about this movie that is not there in any other part of Digimon. Like, they're just like, whatever, we're carrying Digimon. They keep talking and being in front of other humans, and nobody cares. There's no catastrophic response to that from other humans. And it's like, no, if a train just stopped in the middle of... the canyon and all the passengers disappeared and there were random monsters fighting in the middle of fields, like, people would lose their minds.
Well, the field felt kind of isolated, but
weren't they in the Grand Canyon? Did I make that up?
No.
No?
No.
They were not in the Grand Canyon.
The Grand Canyon isn't even in Colorado.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it's in some other state.
but I definitely, there's, I think there's a... an emphasis on spectacle in these movies, this movie, let's just say, that, you know, like, at the risk of everything else, at the risk of, like, maybe not plot, but at the risk of, like, consistency and, you know, like, that, like, consistency isn't even the focus, you know, like, I wouldn't necessarily fault it for that, because it's just, like, it's just tackling a totally different kind of thing, and especially makes sense in the context of movies kind of being in, for anime in Japan in general, like, being just a kind of one-off spectacle kind of thing in concept. And I think it's, what makes it more jarring is that the adventure prequel movie and our war game fit so well with the consistency of the show that makes things like this feel out of place.
Mm-hmm. 0-2.
But I don't think it's a 0-2 problem. I think it's, like, I think it's this, like, the subsequent movies, from my recollection, have this problem too, where it's just like, it's a extension of the not really caring about where things fit canonically plot-wise. You know, like, it's much easier to set the movie if you don't have to worry about restrictions of, like, why do they have the Digimon out? Like, why don't they care about Digimon being seen by humans? Why don't they care? Like, all those things are, like, are things weighing down the script, weighing down the fun, spectacle things that can happen. And it's much more freeing to just be like, who cares? They can just do whatever. They can just Digivolve to Mega and la-di-da. And, like, that's something that starts to be embraced in these movies, I think. But no, even given all that justification, there is no reason why a field would be called Summer Memory.
Colorado, what's there? That is the big unanswered question, I think.
So, I swear at one point, I can't remember if it was just in the English or Japanese version, but that Willis or Wallace says, Wendigomon has been taking other children who have Digimon. Implication for a while. And I'm like, where are those children? Nobody's cared about that? Like, what is this?
That was not in the dub. Okay. I know in the dub, Willis is like, anyone who helps me disappears when Digimon makes, or Kokomon makes them disappear. I was like, well, that's troubling.
Okay, I think it was in the Japanese.
Well, so Ashley, you have to understand that, like, Japan is a very, I guess, like, safe place. I mean, like, yeah, guns are completely legal and, like, you know, like, there's much less crime and violence and people feel much safer. And in contrast, America is just this lawless land where kids disappear and no one notices.
It's true.
It is true, though.
It actually never really tied that into, maybe because since we recorded the first half of the episode, I watched the first episode of Twin Peaks, but now I'm thinking about things from a perspective of people disappearing and their parents' reactions. But, like, the Japanese version has so much time devoted to Wallace's conversations with his mom and, like, reassuring her that he's okay and he just want to keep, I think he even says, like, he wants to have, like, a manly adventure.
Yeah.
He's 11!
But he wants to have an adventure, like the adventure kids, you know? Like, he hasn't chosen for this adventure. He makes the best he can do if he can't go to the Digimon by just exploring America.
It's a bad idea.
You know, like, if he's surrounded by all this loss, in both versions he's surrounded by, like, either his friends disappearing or, like, other Digimon partners, people disappearing who, like, apparently exist. Anyway, like, there's something to the fact that he just, like, keeps telling his mom, like, no, I'm fine. And, like, he is at risk of disappearing at any point. And, like, that's unsettling. It just reminds me of the characters in Twin Peaks who are just, like, after someone is murdered and, like, you know, they're, like, a curfew is put in the town. They're just, like, the kids are just, like, yeah, we'll just keep going out at night, like, whatever. And the parents are just, like, no. And, yeah. I've only seen the first episode of Twin Peaks, so I don't really know what happens. But any more questions?
I mean, we never get to see the 01 kids come back.
Yeah. So, yeah, in the dub, they're just not even, they don't even disappear. But yeah, in the Japanese version, we show them disappearing. We see them in this, like, Nega space where it's actually cool that they keep regressing in time. And, like, there's a point where they are their adventures, original season designs, which is kind of cool. And they get even younger, they regress to their, like, baby forms like the 0-2 people do. But, yeah, like, it's baby presumed forms. That once Trubimon is defeated, they return home, but, like, we don't see that ever. So who knows? Maybe they're lost forever in this canon.
It's like, did those Did all the people on the train just come back? Did all those kids that got stolen forever just reappear? And everybody's like, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably unimportant.
Yeah.
I feel kind of weird that, like, this unanswered question segment hasn't gone on too long, because it's just, like, the whole movie is, the whole movie is, like, what? And...
Yeah.
Yeah.
How does using Upamon as a volleyball work? No. I don't accept it.
Did it happen on the beach?
Yeah. In the very beginning.
I missed that.
Davis and Yovie are using Upamon as a volleyball.
It's a metaphor for something.
Like, I'm sure he's, like, somewhat light, and so maybe you could do that a couple times, but, like, they must have some really strong, like, upper body strength to keep doing. Ridiculous dialogue draft, where we go around each pick our top two funniest, most ridiculous, and most touching lines from the episodes. Two because only a movie. You, my dearest audience, choose a winner on the poll, on the website, which you know by now. You do know this by now. This is not a sports draft. This is a fight to the death.
Okay.
Only one may win.
I mean, now that we're choosing two, it is kind of Hunger Games. Everything we're two things exactly. We've chosen is Hunger Games.
Yeah.
So my first pick, actually spoiled, but maybe it'll be cut out, is when Terrymon digivolves to Gargomon, and Willis's reaction is...
Huh? He's got pants now!
Good job, Willis.
Ashley?
What do I want to pick? Okay, I'll pick the one where Davis and Willis are talking at night in the woods, and then Terrymon comes... And he's like,
Willis?
Huh?
I don't mean to eavesdrop, but I've got really big ears.
It's upsetting me that I have so much of this movie memorized, because I knew what you were saying. All right, mine is from when they first get on that truck where they meet Willis. And Demi Vimon is like,
Davis, get away! He's a Digimon!
And Davis is like,
a what?
Davis, this show is called Digimon. You've been doing this for, like, months. Where have you been?
Oh, God. I hate to break the fun, but now that I think about that, it's probably that they wanted him to say what, like, just being surprised, but he had, like, two syllables, because, like, in Japanese, it would have said nani or whatever.
A what is better.
Yeah. It could have been, like, say what? You know, that's two syllables.
Say what?
This was clearly the superior choice.
So mine's actually, my second pick is actually from the Japanese version, which is where...
Whoa, is that allowed?
Whoa, we're getting into fancy territory here.
I think it's when Wallace and Daisuke, yeah, I said Daisuke, deal with it, are in the forest at night, and I think it's after, like, it's at the end of their conversation, and they're, like, deciding to go back or something. I think that's when it happens. And Wallace says, let's go back. I want to see Miyako's sleeping face, which is, like, so many levels of creepy.
That is so creepy. Whoa.
Wallace is a player, yo.
There's this undercurrent to the Japanese movie. Like, it's kind of there in the dub, too, where, like, Wallace just, like, gets along well with women. Like, is kind of, like, in the same kind of world tour sense. Like, he's, like, this foreign, like, and he's, like, smooth and stuff. And he kind of, he keeps, like, combating with Davis Daisuke about that. And I think in the dub, it's made much more about Kari, which is super weird because, like,
yeah, it's...
Willis saw Kari for like 5 seconds and didn't care about her. And then as soon as he meets Davis, he's like, yeah, I like that girl and whatever. But in the dub, in the Japanese version, he's much more like saying smooth things to Miyako too. And just being a player in general. But like, this is the one part where it's like, that went beyond like being a smooth player to like being a creepy murderer. Like, so.
Yeah. That is creepy.
Oh no, I'm deciding between two. Which one do I go with?
Which one do I... What am I? What is that from? Oh, it's Friday.
Friday. It is not Friday. It's also not Saturday, so there's no Rebecca Black songs we can sing. I'll go with the Angemon, Angewoman line of when the kids are regressing and before they mega digivolve. Angemon's like, and Angewoman's like,
we have to stop him. Before you know it, we'll be changing diapers.
And I'm like, yeah, Angewoman, you don't want to be changing diapers.
Okay. All right. This is from, oh, I guess this is when, after, Davis and Willis fought, Wendigomon, and they catch up with the other kids, and Upamon's like,
it's a big yes to win! No, it's Davis!
Same difference.
That's the one I was choosing between.
Well, I'm glad to get it out there.
Yes.
It brought me great joy. Yeah. I love you, Lee and Davis.
It was so good. So good.
You can find the show notes for this episode at podigis.com/211. Go there to vote on the RDD poll, submit your own unanswered questions and RDD picks, leave and read feedback in the comments section, or find thorough notes on everything we mentioned on the podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Tumblr, and Facebook to get lots of extra images, GIFs, and other fun stuff related to the show. You can also send us feedback on social media or in the discussion threads for the podcast on withthewill and reddit.com/r/digimon. I'm JeffAndLeeJeff on Twitter, Ashley's AshMcD00 on Twitter, Asher's AsherDashery on Tumblr, and you can also find links to our social media at podigis.com. If you like the show, please subscribe, leave a review in iTunes, and share it with your friends. If your friends don't like Digimon, trap them in a pocket dimension and force them to physically regress to their childhood until they like Digimon more. Join us next time as we discuss the second 02 movie, Revenge of Diaboromon, with special guest Mark FBR of With the Will, on Podigis, cuts 02 ways. Bye.
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 And remember, never stop Digivolving.
Some crazy hormone crap happens to her, and then she's wants kids, and like.
Actually, wait, quiet. Hold on. The clock.
Yeah.
It's your biological clock ticking. Once you hit 30.
It's the Final Fantasy clock.
I'm trying to think if I can mix those two jokes.
There are too many Final Fantasies to be on the clock, though.
Final Fantasy 13 doesn't really exist, so.
What? 15 coming out soon. 15
coming out soon. Well, not soon. There's no release date. Not soon. Hopefully it'll come out after Digimon Try.
Maybe it'll come out when PlayStation 5 is available.
Wow. It is a prime example of anime trying to sound like an American speaking English and really not doing a good job.
Will you tell mom, Amy?
Were you just talking, Ash?
I was not.
Why is there like an extra voice in this recording? What the hell?
Yeah, what was that?
Creepy. Will you tell mommy?
Why is that
Ashley?
Will you tell mommy?
What is that?
Ashley,
who is that? Who is that?
What is it? I don't know. It's a ghost. Because like when I edit the file, like I can like do this like edit mode, and like it's so like, can you hear this?
Will you tell mommy that I'm going to the summer memory?
Okay, wait. That sounded fine.
That was Willis. Yeah, that was normal.
That was Wallace, actually.
Whatever. Yeah, it was Wallace.
But yeah, why is there an extra thing in the, so that was just playing the edit mode, and then if I actually play the sound clip, there's like this extra. Wait, I'm gonna try something else. What else can I do? Why is there an extra voice in the background?
So scary.
What are they saying? Why is there a ghost?
It was just a joke, sir.
I'm not laughing.
This is great.
It was just a joke, sir.
Okay, I'm quitting this app. Kill this ghost. Like, I can understand if it was playing the whole time, but it's only when I play the clips, right?
Yeah.
And you guys can hear I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can hear it. It's really creepy.
It might actually be this thing. So soundboard goes to there. It records output. Oh, maybe it's that it's... Everything's routed fine. Shouldn't be doing this. Okay, I'm gonna try. Going to try this. Tell me if you can still hear the weird ghost.
No, there's no weird ghost.
Did you hear anything?
I heard, yeah, Vimon, I'm your friend!
Weird, because yeah. I didn't hear it that time. Okay, I'm gonna try that again. Why is it silent? So did you hear that? Did you hear Oh No?
Yes.
Something is bizarre.
Something's possessing your computer.
All right,
well, we heard the Wallace clip.
Yeah, we heard the Wallace clip, but do you hear a song now?
No.
Do you hear the song now?
Yes.
Okay, so that's as I would expect. But for some reason, playing this doesn't... What is going on? Like, I don't hear this at all. And, oh, sorry for this delay. It's weird because I was playing the intro song fine.
Yes.
Now I can't hear anything. Okay, I'm going to hit stop here and start again. Okay, you can still hear me, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, nothing changed.
What?
Will you tell Mom Amy that I'm going to the summer memory?
Oh.
You are using an unregistered version of something.
I should have let it play the whole... Okay. So I guess after a certain number of uses, it starts playing that.
Super creepy.
I don't remember that. Do you guys remember that?
No. Do you think I remember anything?
I don't remember seeing the movie, like, in theaters.
Didn't see it in theaters, Ashley?
No.
I don't think I did either.
Bought it on video when it came out.
What?
So I saw it in theaters. I can't remember, like, if it was, you know, how soon after it went into theaters. I remember the one, the Pokemon movie came out, being, like, I think I saw it Saturday afternoon, and it came out, like, the Friday before. I remember thinking, like, I heard tales of people who didn't go to school on Friday to go see it, and I was like, oh my god, how have they, like, they've seen what happens, and I haven't. Like, how, I can't even, like...
This is how, me in the, like, Hunger Games movie.
No. Ashley, you're, like, twice as old as I was back then. You shouldn't have this feeling.
It doesn't matter.
But I don't remember having that type of Digimon for some reason. I guess because, like, lots of, like, there was a lot of network effect with Pokemon where, like, everyone else was hyped about the movie, whereas Digimon was, like, more of a private thing.
It's hard to be hype about Digimon when everybody's, like, secretly watching it.
Yeah. covertly watching it.
Yeah.
But no, when I saw the Digimon movie, I forget if I mentioned this on the podcast, but I went with my dad. We were the literally only people in the theater. It was two of us, an empty theater. The only time I've seen that.
So, like, it's hard, just like cold starting into this.
Cold start, go.
Well, what is there a better way we can?
No, let me try to remember what I was.
211.
Let me remember what I was talking about when I wrote this down. God, they do actually go to the moon. Yes, that was the thing that happened. They took a train to the moon.
Of course.
Duh. If only we could take trains to the moon.
Fly me to the moon. And let me play among the stars. Do 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 do. Jupiter and Mars.
Okay.
No one's gonna join me in the Avis ending song.
No.
Hell no. Hate that show.
That show was an experience. One that I would give back if I could.
I'm so glad that Ash and I hate this show together.
No, okay, so I, like, watched it with Char, and it was really fun because the whole time we were like, what is happening? Why? Shinji, just get out of the robot. We don't care anymore.
I think I really just hate that show more because everybody else loves it, and I'm like, no, I just can't deal with this.
Yeah.
You have a tendency to hate things other people love.
That is untrue. Hey, I love the Hunger Games.
Ashley, we are in agreement on something.
Oh, yes! High five!
It's agreement on not liking something, but I'll take what I can get at this point.
It's fine. It's good.
Yeah.
Jeffrey, I like things that I will defend people's right to like things that are otherwise derided, like Twilight. I will not defend people's right to like Evangelion. Don't care. I don't need to defend that. Like,
but I don't know why I'm talking.
Because you're Jeff and that's what you do.
You guys are amazing, like, in the morning.
It's like, so actually, so my thought process is like, wait, so Ash, have you played Ace Attorney games?
I played Ace Attorney versus Professor Layton.
Oh. I don't
know that one. That was a good game.
But the way that...
Dork.
I've only played the first Phoenix Wright game and some of the second game so far. But a strategy he often employs is just like, I don't know where I'm going with this, but let me like spout these thoughts and like eventually it'll work out. And that's kind of how I approach this. And like, if I just talk, like I have like the beginning of an argument that doesn't fit together yet, but maybe if I start talking, it'll fit together.
That's actually how I do everything I say.
The nice part of it then is that in the podcast, I can cut out the stuff that doesn't actually cohere together. So everyone just thinks that we're brilliant.
It's true. And cutting out the pauses just makes us sound so much more intelligent.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, he just hits every criterion.
Well, every criteria.
No. It's plural. Every makes things singular, Jeff.
Oh, you're totally right. Yeah. Yeah. It's not like a few bullet points.
Gosh. Shh.
Why are you... Stop picking on me for being colorblind.
Oh, yeah. Because you don't believe people who aren't colorblind. It's infuriating.
I can't... I have to believe things in my own eyes, Ashley.
Okay. No. He's white with green accents.
Through my own eyes. Looking for something.
Yo, that theme song is badass.
Okay.
Especially that Aaron Carter rap breakdown.
Oops, I paused it. Just the way it goes. We're now to the wise.
The world is made to change. Today's a surprise.
Life through my own eyes. You would idolize. Being as innocent stars. Life through my own eyes.
I'm hoping it. Oh no, it doesn't do the whole thing.
This is Aaron Carter.
I know. Patriotic.
Oh, is this that show about. Is this Liberty Kids or whatever?
Yes.
Yeah. So you know how I've never heard about this show? I've never heard of this show. I'm wondering if maybe it was like much more popular in Philly than in the entire rest of the United States. Just because of
I think
founding
Jeff
fathers.
And I well I mean I
well,
think
it was on like PBS.
Yeah, it was on PBS. I think Jeff and I were too old for it when it came out, but we both did not have cable, so I think it facilitated my like watching PBS more, even though I was like 15.
I see.
Yeah, it was on like Sunday mornings before I went to like Sunday school, I think, or something like that. And,
yeah, okay.
But it's definitely possible it was shown more on like the Philadelphia PBS affiliates, or whatever they're called, the stations.
Yeah, it might have been more obsessed with it.
It's kind of Philadelphia propaganda.
It really is.
So Ashley, we have the full DVD set, don't we? Didn't we get that?
Do
at some
we?
Point?
I forgot. Oh my goodness!
Next podcast.
I'm sorry. Oh yes, my God. I am not watching that with you.
Why not? It's amazing.
Why not? Because we're never gonna finish
it's
Digimon.
It's such America propaganda. It's so funny. I love it.
Ash, I can send you a copy. I can send you a copy of the complete series. It's only $5 on a DVD.
That's okay.
I'll send it to you.
No thanks.
But this is just sad. Like it's on Amazon as $2 per episode, and the DVD is $5.
Suckers.
How many episodes are there?
I thought there's like 40.
Yeah. Wow. Because on Amazon you can buy $2 per episode or $15 for the whole series for like watching instantly, and it's like, why would you ever do that? The timeline of Liberty's Kids is just ridiculous because it's like set over the like 10 to 15 years between the I forget the we need to watch it to remember what happens in the Revolutionary War.
Yeah, but, we need like serious sugarcoating of what happened during the Revolutionary War.
Yeah, there's at least 10 years between the like Boston Tea Party and the signing of the Constitution, and yet these kids never grow up in the time.
They don't grow at all. They're just the same. It's great.
I mean, Liberty's Kids is basically Digimon for Revolutionary War. So.
Oh yeah. Okay.
I mean, if they don't grow, that sounds more like Pokemon to me.
Yeah.
That's true.
Digimon's about the growing. Sorry, I was looking up Deputymon to see what Digivolves into Deputymon, and the Digimon Wikia is not telling me anything.
He just exists like that. He comes out of an
egg. He just exists like that, yeah. Well, he's he's a champion.
Well, I mean, if you go on Sora's dad's theory that, like, Digimon are just, like, inanimate objects come to life, like, he could just be a gun that found his way into the digital world.
That's kind of weird.